Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Welcome in, 10:06, 720 WGN. I'm Jordan Burnfield, hanging out with you till 1 a.m. tonight, tomorrow, however you choose to look at it. It's up to you. Ashley Byhun is our producer. We just had news from David Jennings, but Roger Badish will be in the newsroom. We're all hanging out with you through midnight till 1 o'clock tonight. And we got a fun show for you. Obviously, when I'm doing a show, there's definitely going to be sports conversation, and we're going to do that on the program tonight, but also veer off of sports, do a little food discussion, some app discussion. I'm really interested in some of these bizarre apps that are out that just exist. And I have a lot of apps on my phone, but I feel like I definitely don't need all the ones that I have. But some people, I don't know what the, you know, you get those screen time updates every week, how much you use your phone. I must be like at the low end, because if there are people that are using some of the apps that we're going to talk about it tonight, they must be spending all of their time on their phones. 312-981-7200 is our phone number if you'd like to join us via text or via phone call. And Mark Harmon, who just had the last 3 hours on this radio station, is sticking around because more Mark is very good thing here on WGN.
That's so nice of you to say, Jordan Burnfield. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you. And thanks for stopping by. So I wanted to start tonight by talking about the Cubs managerial search. Now that Joe Maddon is officially gone, I know a lot of people are calling it a firing, but technically it would just be like a non-renewal of contract, right? I feel like this is one of those weird technicalities in journalism that seems to slide by.
He was fired.
And for all intents and purposes. But he's gone. A new manager is coming in. And because I am a loyal listener to the On the Mark podcast, I really do. I do listen to your podcast a pretty good amount.
God bless you. Thank you.
And so I heard you interview David Ross just a week ago. And you asked him about the potential of managing another team in baseball.
Do I one day have an itch to manage? You know, that's definitely crossed my mind, especially with all the rumors that fly around. And do I want to put my stamp on a team and the things I believe in? Of course. Like, you see things, I mean, I think even as a casual fan, you start to want to kind of do things your way. So yeah, I mean, like I said, it's all about opportunity. I think when you have to give up and sacrifice family time, and it's got to be worth it, you know, it's got to be worth your while to get back in the dugout and be, you got to have a passion for it, because I don't do things halfway. I go all in, and so that's a huge commitment for me, but it's definitely flattering to hear those rumors.
David Ross is the presumptive favorite to get this Cubs job. I think everybody knows that, and it seems that from what people are saying, Mark, that it's his job to lose, right? That if he wants to manage the Cubs, he's going to be the next manager of the Chicago Cubs. Now, I realize that there are reports today that, you know, Joe Girardi's going to interview and Will Venable's going to interview. If Will Venable gets the Cubs job, that would be the shocker of all shockers.
That would be an upset.
But listening to your interview with Rossi, he seems like he is doing his best political job of campaigning for this position without outright saying, I want to be the next manager of the Cubs.
Which I do wonder how that actually plays with Theo. Because he was on my podcast, which is probably not quite as big as ESPN. And then he goes on.
I think it is. In my mind, it is.
It's like right below it. Yeah. And then he goes on ESPN, you know, a week later, says the same thing. So it wasn't like I tricked him into saying anything, right? I mean, I asked him, and then I saw him the next day. Excuse me. Like, he comes on the podcast. I go to Wrigley, and I'm like, you know, I had to ask him. He said, I get it. I'm like, well. And then last year, he was supposedly going to be the Minnesota Twins manager, or the Twins wanted him. He told me, like, they never called me. They never asked. So I think this guy's, my point is that I think this guy's actually wanted to be a manager for a while now. And my guess is it's not going to happen. I don't think the Cubs are going with Russ. If you listen to Theo, like, they're trying to move forward, and they want something new. David Ross is not I mean, he's new.
He's not new.
He's new in the fact that he'd be a new manager, but he was, you know, he's connected to 2016.
Yeah.
So I'm skeptical. I know that if you go to Vegas, like the, Ross is the odds-on favorite. Girardi's plus 700. I'd put some money down on Joe. That's just I think Joe is what they're naming what they want. To me, it's Girardi all day.
Well, so we'll get to Joe Girardi, but on that point,
yeah.
David Ross also said on your podcast that if he is going to become a manager, now he lives in Florida, he's doing this 50-game package for ESPN of baseball during the season, where I'm sure many out there listening have seen him do national games, the Little League World Series, whatever. He's very good at it, but if he wants to move back to Chicago, I guess that might qualify as a special opportunity.
It goes back to, like, what's the opportunity to get out of this lifestyle I live now and to get back in the game? But I'll tell you, my heart definitely itches to get in that dugout at times and be a part of something special that I've been a part of before. So there's a push-pull for sure, and it's going to have to be a unique opportunity that would pull me away from my family and the sacrifices you make to be in the major leagues.
Now, that was on your podcast, On the Mark, which you could find on, I assume, anywhere you get podcasts. That's what I do. I literally just, I subscribed, I punch it up, there you are. Your face is there with your pensive look.
Yes, it's your iTunes, it's your Spotify, it's your Spreaker, it's out there for you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jordan, I appreciate it.
No problem. But so Ross said that, and then it made me think of what you just said about Joe Girardi, because there were rumors that last year, Joe Girardi, after his tenure with the Yankees expired, there was discussion about, well, yeah, presumably Joe would want to keep managing. He's won a World Series. He's been very successful. He was manager of the year in Florida when they were the Florida Marlins, all these different things. This is the special opportunity for him, too.
No question.
Northwestern, Peoria, Cubs, all of the connections for Joe Girardi, it would feel like, you know, the Yankees was a perfect opportunity for him at the time because he played for the Yankees. And so that was the first special opportunity. But it feels like whether you hire Ross or Girardi, either way, for a team that's about to have a new television network next year, you could have an awfully nice narrative to go with either manager.
Yes. And look, just rewinding back for 1 second, I would not have fired Joe Maddon.
Oh, 100%.
Like, why you're getting rid of the greatest manager in Cubs history? Because,
without question.
What? Yeah. By far the tallest tree in the forest when it's talking about Cubs manager. The other ones aren't even trees. they're barely bushes. But so I wouldn't have done that. But now you're, as far as like the fan base, you hired
Ross. What about Lee Elia? He's
Lee,
up there,
Lee
right?
Elia is a piece of blade of grass in that history. But so, but a great rant nonetheless. I believe that
yes.
Les Grobstein and Mark Giangreco were
the only two, they'll be the first two to tell you that
Yes, they will. But that as they should.
Yeah.
But so I think that Ross and or Girardi will be embraced, I would say, even by the fan base. I think. But so they're trying to make a hire that will lead them into the next Cubs championship team. It's a big hire. I mean, I'm of the belief that the manager is important. They make a lot of decisions. They set a huge tone. I don't think the Cubs win the 2016 World Series without Maddon.
I agree, but this is a topic that I want to get into on the show. So let me start out by talking about it with you. I think that the way managers are valued in baseball is different now than it ever has been. Wouldn't you agree? Just the way that they're paid a lot less, experience is a lot less important than it used to be. And Joe Maddon really is the old school prototype manager in the context of today, right? He's 65 years old. He's been in baseball a long time. His resume is, you know, lifer in the game. A lot of these guys now, it's like, well, he's never managed, but he's out of the dugout for 2 years. Like, let's throw him in there and he'll be fine.
Right.
And look at Rocco Baldelli, won 100 games with the Twins this year.
Aaron Boone with the Yankees.
Right.
Right. But these
Alex Cora won the World Series last year with the Red Sox with no experience.
Right. And maybe David Ross can do it. I'm not.
So Joe Girardi would fulfill sort of like the Maddon criteria, you know, like super experienced, great resume to take this job. Whereas David Ross is more the new school guy. It's like, you know, just out of the dugout, buddies with half the team, easy transition.
And maybe they can't go wrong. Maybe either is a great hire. I for their sake, I hope that is the case. But it was very clear, and you know that Ross is very interested in doing it. Now he does have three kids, and who knows how that all plays into it. Girardi is even more out there. Yes, I'm interested in the Cubs job. I'm interested in any job. I want to manage again.
Yeah.
Hey.
Well, because last year wasn't the story. If I'm remembering correctly, there was an opportunity potentially with the Rangers last year or a couple of other teams that were less competitive, and the belief was Joe's going to take the year off and work at MLB Network because, wink, 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 the Cubs job might be open in a year, right?
I forgot about that. That's interesting to...
I mean, because he's got such a pedigree.
Yeah, but I don't think he was banking on getting it.
Maybe not this one, but I'm just a better job, right?
Sure.
So, like,
okay,
better than being taking a last place team.
Sure.
Job.
Okay, that's fair. And
because even like the Angels, I think is a really good opening, which Joe Maddon is rumored to be in line for. But if I'm not saying that the Angels are a great team because they're not. But they have an ownership that's willing to spend money. You've got Trout there. You've got Ohtani there. If they could add a big-time starter, which maybe Gerrit Cole is that guy, you've got the pieces to be in the mix next year in the AL West.
And maybe Joe gets them to overachieve. Their farm system's not very good out there. But regardless,
right?
You go live in Anaheim,
Santa Clara or whatever.
Drink wine, chill out. You're 65 years old. You won a World Series. I think Joe's got enough confidence in himself that he thinks he can turn any situation
around.
It's
good wine out there too.
Yeah, I've never done it, Jordan.
You're going to have to do that.
Okay, a little Napa situation.
I would say so. Yes.
Okay. All right. Maybe that's in my future.
I think you and Chelsea can make the trip out there.
I hope she's making some money over there. Napa seems like a very expensive trip.
It depends on how you do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I could do it like sideways wise. You ever see the movie Sideways?
I've not. No.
Oh, really? You've never seen Sideways?
No.
That is so up your alley.
I'm sure it is, but I'm bad with movies. I'm way better with TV shows.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bad with movies is, at least you own it. Good job.
I mean, I'm honest at least. So can you stay for one more segment? We can do Bears?
I would love to.
Okay. So we're talking Cubs managerial situation. Talk a little Bears with Mark Harmon because he is the man that orchestrates what I find to be one of the most entertaining things on radio, the Hampo B. and Kaz show after the Bears games. So we'll get his take on Bears and Raiders, and maybe Carm will do a bad British accent for us when we come back. 720 WGN. Welcome back, 720 WGN. Jordan Bernfield with you tonight, keeping you company until 1 a.m. So for those of you who are driving around on a Friday night, or perhaps you're just in, you're hanging out, you just want to listen to some radio, we're here to keep you company. And Mark Harmon is kind enough to stick around and stay in studio a little bit. We talked about his podcast called On the Mark, which you should check out, and his interview with David Ross. But I wanted to switch, do a little Bears discussion, because that last promo was OB, I think, fairly calm for OB.
God bless him.
And that show is amazing. And I love how you handle it, because you kind of don't have to say a whole lot to get them going, but you just let them go, and it's hysterical radio.
Honestly, I say five words when the show starts, Jordan, and then they're already like, stop talking. Let me get out every single Bears thought that I've ever had about what just transpired. So
it's so good.
I appreciate it. They're beautiful men. They're passionate men. And hey, the Bears could easily be 4-0 if they scored 11 points against the Green Bay Packers, right?
Yeah, so let me give you a macro point about the Bears, and you tell me what you think. They're obviously fantastic defensively. The quarterback situation, honestly, when Trubisky got hurt, the first thing that came to my mind, because of how my brain works, was you and me arguing about McCown and Cutler 8 years ago on this station.
Which was a great argument.
The McCownies are back in the form of Chase Daniel. But I feel like because the biggest weakness with the Bears, I think objectively, is the quarterback position. In the short term, they might be better with Chase Daniel for just the next few games. I know that in the long term, they're hoping, obviously, that Trubisky is the quarterback of the future. That's not debatable. And Trubisky's clearly more talented. But Chase Daniel's more accurate. And the way that they're running the offense, Daniel is probably better for what they're doing right now. Is that crazy?
Well, so he knows the offense better. He's been with Matt Nagy in Philly and Kansas City and now Chicago, so there's that. I think he's just more confident in himself right now.
I think he's more accurate.
And he's more accurate. He sees the field better. He's a more accurate thrower. You're naming the talent gap between the two, which is real. Mitch Trubisky obviously can get out of the pocket and move better. But that's not how you win football games in the NFL. It's also how, when you don't see the field well, you get yourself in trouble and you end up getting yourself hurt, which is, it feels almost unfair to say that he got himself hurt playing the game of football and wasn't unlucky. But if he had actually read the field, if you go back and look at the play where he ends up separating his shoulder and is out for this week and hopefully he'll be back after the bye, he should never have left the pocket. He freaked out, which is part of his MO.
Yeah.
And it happened last year too. So, and you don't want to take that away from him, but it's also something that you're going to have with him. These guys, mobile quarterbacks, they get dinged. Their careers get short. Look at Andrew Luck, or look at even Deshaun Watson's having a great start to his career, but he's missed a ton of time too.
I mean, remember Robert Griffin his first year,
right?
I mean, they're different quarterbacks, but if you remember Griffin for a year, it was like, wow, he's going to be a star in the league. And then he kept getting hit and his career was derailed. But I find it amusing, and we're going to talk to Kevin Powell after midnight about the Bears, and I brought this up to him earlier. I said, it's funny that Ryan Pace was brought here to make the Bears the Saints, and as it turns out, he made them the Bears because they're the same thing they've always been, and my fear is that, as amazing as their defense is, they can't win the Super Bowl if their quarterback play is not appreciably better. Because I'm just waiting for them. I mean, I think they're going to beat the Raiders on Sunday, but the Raiders stink. I think they're going to win a lot of games in the regular season because you can overwhelm teams defensively. But you get to a playoff game against a Drew Brees or an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson or a Jared Goff and a big-time offense, and if your defense has one bad game, you're out.
They're going to need some production from the quarterback position.
Yes.
I agree.
I'm just saying, I know it sounds maybe obvious or even trite, but I feel like as much as I want to be excited about what they're doing, in the back of my mind, it's like,
I
don't know.
It's interesting. It's reminding back to your other point, are they better with Chase or are they better with Mitch? And because he's more accurate, maybe perhaps they are better. But maybe their ceiling gets lowered long term because Chase Daniel doesn't have the upside of Mitch Trubisky. I might submit the argument that I'm not even sure if that's true. I'm not sure what Mitch Trubisky's upside is. I think, if you go into the season by any publication, he's ranked somewhere between the 22nd to 29th best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
So can he get to 15? When? This year? Next year?
The problem, though, is that next year is the last year on that rookie deal, right?
Right.
So they're going to have to make a decision on what he is.
They could pick up his fifth option and play it out to the end, which
that's
is probably was probably how it will go. But that's, one of the most, and I know you're getting up against the clock, and I'll get on out of your hair here, but there's this guy by the name of Gardner Minshew,
best mustache,
right?
Probably in the league,
best mustache ever. He's playing for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was backing up Nick Foles, who's out for the year.
Tell us about Gardner Minshew.
Well, the point is that he was a 6th-round draft pick, and Matt Nagy was asked about him at one of the press conferences fairly recently.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, we really like Gardner. And Mark Potash asked the question, how do you compute that here's a guy, 6th-round pick, and he's stepping in, he's super successful, and we're still waiting for Mitch to get there? Which, my point is that I just don't know if he's ever going to get there.
But don't you feel like, if we're being completely honest right now, okay, don't you feel like if Mitch Trubisky was going to be a star NFL quarterback, that by today he would be that already?
Yes,
I mean, I feel
I
like
do.
We're all saying that, there's more development that needs to occur because we're all hoping that he's going to the light bulb is going to go on and he's going to become this quarterback that we all want him to be. And I would love for that to be the case, too. I'm not rooting against Mitch Trubisky. I just feel like I've seen enough to know that he's okay.
Swing and a miss, strike three.
And the inning is over.
And the inning, that's what I think.
Yeah.
And I get it. You invested a bunch of dough and multiple draft picks to move on up to get him, but so you're not going to punt on him. But that doesn't mean that he's ever going to figure it out. And my biggest concern, too, well, I don't know. There's a lot of concerns. I did this take, I think, last week. I just don't think the guy's very bright as far as, like, football intelligence goes. When I listen to him talk and I watch him on the field, the way he's digesting everything that's coming at him, football, the quarterback position is a difficult position.
Really hard.
You got a million things. They're generally smart people.
Doesn't it look like... And listen, I think I know the game, but I don't think I'm, you know, like these coaches, obviously, I don't know the game the way they do, but I sit and watch the game and I'm like, I know where he's throwing every play. He locks his eyes on Allen Robinson most of the time. And if he's not open, it's like, which one of my guys is open? And I just feel like you watch these great quarterbacks. And I'm not even saying that he has to be a top five quarterback for them to win. He just needs to be like an above average quarterback for them to win. But you watch them, the better quarterbacks in the league, they look so much more comfortable. It's just a different thing.
Right.
It's a different thing.
Watch them and listen to them. And yeah. Some guys are afraid of the media and they don't want to do it. But he just, when he talks 8,000 miles per hour. And I'm like, is anything sinking in over there? Because it doesn't look like it on the field, and it doesn't sound like it off the field, and that's just concerning.
312-981-7200 is our phone number if you want to join in on the conversation about Mitch Trubisky or you want to react to the Cubs' managerial search. We'll do that after the 10:30 news. Mark, thank you for sticking around for a little bit.
Jordan, thanks for having me, brother. Appreciate you. Have a great show.
Thank you. Mark Harmon joining us in this first half hour. News time, it is sponsored by Team Hochberg. Here is Roger Badish. WGN, welcome back. Jordan Bernfield with you tonight until 1. So hanging out with you at 312-981-7200 if you want to join in on the conversation, talking to little Bears, a little Cubs managerial search. And one texter from the 815 suggested Ryan Sandberg for the Cubs managerial position. I think that ship has sailed. He is not in consideration, and he is an ambassador for the Cubs, and I think he's happy in that position, so I don't think that is something that would be considered for the future. 312 texter says, remember Joe G was offered the managerial job a few years ago and didn't want it, and this guy says he doesn't want Joe Girardi to be the manager now. Well, I think Joe Girardi is a really good option for the Cubs, and I think that if they go with Ross or they go with Girardi, either way, I don't think you'll lose there. And I think that there's multiple reasons for this. The benefits for David Ross, if the Cubs were to go in that direction, is that even though he lacks managerial experience, by all accounts, David Ross is the kind of guy who will get in your face when you make a mistake. Theo Epstein, in his end-of-the-season press conference, did make note several times that he believes what the Cubs really need is someone to hold people more accountable in that clubhouse. Not to say that Joe Maddon didn't, but his view is that clearly accountability is something that he felt was lacking a bit over the last couple of years, and perhaps it is one of the reasons why the Cubs finished flat at the end of 2018 and then obviously, you know, dove out of the playoff race in 2019. When it comes to Ross, the benefit is that he's a guy that would hold people accountable by all accounts. He is someone who is definitely a guy that had a respect of that clubhouse. He knows the players. Theo and Jed obviously like him. They've brought him back as a special assistant working in the organization. So there's a lot of benefit there. On the other side, Joe Girardi, kid from Peoria, played at Northwestern, played for the Cubs, played for the Yankees as a player, won World Series, as a manager of the Yankees over 10 seasons, was successful every year, won the World Series in 2009, was manager of the year, I believe, in 2006, I want to say, as the Florida Marlins manager. I mean, Joe Girardi checks all the boxes in terms of guy that's been around the game for a long time, very successful in every role that he's been in, and Chicago connections and Cubs connections. So I think I would be surprised. I know that there are other candidates that are out there, according to reports, but I don't think they're hiring Will Venable. I don't think that they're hiring Mark Loretta, and I don't think that they're hiring Joe Espada, the Astros bench coach who has been discussed and rumors. I listen, maybe they hire one of those guys. They surprise me. I've also seen Mark DeRosa's name, but I don't think that's happening. I really think this is coming down to whether David Ross wants the job, or perhaps they decide that Joe Girardi is the better option. Either that Ross doesn't want the job, or they feel like Girardi is the guy that makes the most sense. I think either way, they're going in the right direction. So I think that both of those candidates would be good. And I did, like I said to Mark, I do think that they're never going to say this, and I don't believe that they're choosing it because of this, but it certainly doesn't hurt, if all things are equal, that whether you choose Ross or you choose Joe Girardi, that either one of these guys has a nice story that you can sell when you have a new TV network coming next season. Brian from LaPorte wants to talk a little bit about Mitch Trubisky and the Bears. Hey, Brian, welcome to WGN. Hey, Brian. Maybe I don't have him potted up, and I'm going to figure that out. But, hey, I'm still pretty new here trying to figure out all the different buttons on this board, and I'm looking for where it says phone, and there it is. So hopefully now this will work. Trial number two. Hey, Brian, you're on WGN.
How you doing, Jordan?
Yes.
Good, good. Yeah, I'm Brian, and
thanks for the call. Sorry I didn't know how to pot you up. I'm learning the board.
Hey, that's okay. That's yeah. Okay. You and Mark were talking a little bit about Mitchell.
Yeah.
And how the way he talks and when he's doing his media shows, if you will, like such as talking to the press.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you watch Mitchell now, and it's like you watched him 6 months ago or even a year ago, when he's talking in front of the press, he's telling the press what they want to know, not what they want to hear.
Do you think so, though? I feel like he talks in circles sometimes. Do you think so?
Exactly. As with Nagy.
Well, I think Nagy is actually pretty candid, except for when it comes to very specific strategy things that he doesn't think would benefit them talking about.
Correct. But, yes, I do believe that is one reason why Mitchell talks, if you will, in circles.
All right.
Because you know, if Mitchell's home with his parents having dinner, he's not going to talk like that in front of his mother.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely different when you're in front of the mic. I do agree with that, and I appreciate your call, Brian. 312-981-7200. I do think, though, that when you watch Mitchell play, one of the things that I think that he clearly has all the physical skills. There's no reason to doubt that. When Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy were looking at Mitchell Trubisky, that they could evaluate the physical traits, right? He's a good athlete. He runs well. He has a good arm. He checks all the boxes in terms of the physical traits to be a quarterback. But I think we all know that to be a successful NFL quarterback, and let me caveat this by saying it's unbelievably hard to be a successful quarterback in the NFL. When you think about how many good quarterbacks there are very few that are actually really good at their job. It's just that when you see the best ones do it as well as they do, naturally we're all like, well, why doesn't our guy do that? But there are a few cream of the crop guys at the top, and everybody else isn't that good. And there's tons of Division I college quarterbacks that are looking to play in this league every year that don't make it because they're not good enough. That said, when I watch Mitchell Trubisky play quarterback, it's not the physical issues. I mean, I don't think he's the most accurate quarterback, but I also think, as Mark and I were talking about, that he does not read defenses particularly well. And even, I think, if you're a novice fan and you're just casually watching, you can notice that when Trubisky is locked on a guy, it's pretty obvious. He's looking at one receiver, and the best quarterbacks, in my opinion, are the ones that when they drop back, they look comfortable. They're able to maneuver out of the pocket if need be. Their eyes are always looking forward at the field. And it seems like they're able to see multiple things happening at the same time. That's what makes these great quarterbacks. And I don't know that Mitch is that. And Mark brought up a good point. Perhaps it's the case that even if he does not have a great finish to this season after he returns from the shoulder injury, and let's say the Bears end up falling at some point in the playoffs and Mitch isn't great, they're going to give him next year because he's contractually going to be here next year, I think. And then maybe if there's still question about whether he has another step to take in terms of his potential at that point, they pick up a fifth-year option if they don't have a better option by that time. But I just think that it doesn't look like he's a great quarterback. It just doesn't. And I think that if he were going to be a great quarterback, we would have seen it. And that's the disappointing thing. Because I think, objectively speaking, Ryan Pace has done a really good job. They have a ton of talent defensively that they did not have prior to his arrival. He's made two mistakes that are of glaring nature since he took over the Bears. One, I think, unfortunately, is the quarterback. I don't think Mitchell's terrible, but I don't think he's very good. And the other one is the kicker. And we all know how that worked out at the end of last season. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Jumping between the Cubs and the Bears, talking about the Cubs managerial search and the current state of the Bears. But Tom on the Northwest side wants to talk a little bit about the Cubs managerial hire. Tom, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Jordan. Have a lot of respect for you. I heard you at the other station down the dial.
Oh, thank you very much.
And I respect your opinions. I hope you respect my opinions when I tell you that the Cubs have done so many foolish things under Epstein and Hoyer. And one of the biggest failures, and you have to concur with me, is DJ LeMahieu. I'm just thinking 2011.
Yeah, that one didn't work out so well, huh?
Well, and how doubling it up at the end of 2018, Epstein could have picked him up for $25 million for 2 years. This guy is fantastic. Tonight he got a home run, a double. He drove in, I think it's four runs. With a double, he drove in three runs. Yeah, he's terrific.
He's terrific. That was a whiff. Yeah, I think we would agree, though, Tom, that overwhelmingly the Theo Epstein era with the Cubs has been pretty darn good. Wouldn't you say that?
How about Morrow? Let's go through the whole litany.
I mean, Morrow was not a good signing. They've admitted that was not a good signing.
Let's go through not just him, so many of them. How about Jay Hay? How about, you know, just name them all off.
I mean, Jay Hay's been a mixed signing. But, I mean, they did win the World Series with his team, right? So,
right,
been pretty good.
And look, he did a great job at Boston, and he left the place a mess. And when he leaves in 2021, he's going to leave the Cubs a tremendous mess with all these contracts that nobody's going to buy him. You got to concur with me. It's really... And
I will respectfully disagree that nobody else would want him. I think he's going to the Hall of Fame. He's one of the best executives.
I'm saying not him. I'm saying that the players that he stuck us with that had the contracts, like Jay Hay and Morrow and so many of them.
Well, Morrow's off the books now, fortunately. But, Tom, I really appreciate your call and your nice words, and I do respect your opinion. And I think there have definitely been misses. There's no question. I mean, but I think any executive makes great moves and bad moves. And Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer have been pretty candid, I would say, when it comes to areas where they have faltered in building the Cubs and now trying to maintain what is this winning window. It's really disappointing that right now the Cubs are in the position that they're in, that they did not make the playoffs in a year that was earmarked for success, right? After 2015 and they made that big jump, the next five seasons were supposed to be really successful. It's not like the Cubs are terrible this year. They won 84 games, but obviously the expectation now is different than it used to be, and it's supposed to be that you make the postseason. They didn't make the postseason, but I think they're wearing it. They know that they made mistakes. They know that their errors have put them in this position to a certain degree. But I also think that if you're a Cubs fan, that you probably feel pretty good about the fact that you have really good management in place to try to fix this. I'm not absolving them of the mistakes. There are mistakes. There are clear mistakes. Tom mentioned them, but I still think that they're going to be fine. I don't feel like they have to make drastic changes to be very competitive in 2020, but they do have to make some tweaks, and perhaps there is a big-time move to be made within there that can really change their fortunes. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you'd like to join us on the program. Coming up right after midnight, we're going to talk to Kevin Powell right here from WGN, our great sports anchor in the afternoon, and he and I are going to talk little Bears, little Blackhawks. We're going to go Cubs and White Sox. But coming up next, we're going to jump off the sports page, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the craziest apps that exist on your phone. And also, we're going to talk about a story in the restaurant industry that I think is pretty interesting. It's all coming up, 720 WGN. Don't pull your love out on me, baby. 720 WGN, Jordan Bernfield with you here tonight, keeping you company until 1 a.m. tonight, and it's good to be with you talking some sports, but hey, when you get me in the studio and you give me a microphone, I'm definitely going to want to talk a little sports, and we'll continue the sports conversation at 312-981-7200. But this is sort of related to sports because a sports person was involved in this story, but this also just made me laugh, so I wanted to throw this out there. So, I don't know if you saw this, but there, the former ESPN and CNN sports business reporter, he was on CNBC, now he's with a network called Action HQ, which I don't know a whole lot about, but you've probably seen him on Twitter. His name is Darren Rovell, right? Everybody follows his Twitter. He's got like number of million Twitter followers. He went to Northwestern, so he's got a Chicago tie. But, you know, usually if you follow his Twitter, you get a mixture of things of sports betting comments, and then you get like a smattering of food pictures from MLB ballparks, and you get like a lot of random things. But he's like sort of the king of Twitter, but he also gets made fun of a lot on Twitter. So he is always on the medium. Like if I sign into my Twitter and I feel like I tweet a lot less than I used to, or at least sign into my Twitter a lot less than I used to, his tweets are always at the top of the list because I feel like this guy is on Twitter 24 hours a day. He was in Chicago recently, and he went to Arami in Westtown, really good sushi spot. And he noticed that on the bill for his sushi, which he paid $94 for, so, I mean, they had a substantial amount of sushi, there was a optional 2% surcharge that it itemized on the bill was for health insurance coverage for its employees. The fee was $1.69 for Ravel's dinner. So then Ravel goes onto the Twitter machine because, I mean, let's be honest, he's always on the Twitter machine. And he tweeted, quote, "The food was good tonight, so I don't mind paying for the health insurance for the guy who made my sushi. Wait, what?" And then proceeded to post a picture of the receipt, which showed in the itemized line that there was a line for health insurance for the employees for $1.69. Now, Ashley, I ask you, if you saw at the bottom of a receipt at a place you went to for dinner that there was an optional surcharge to pay for health insurance for the employees, be honest, would you pay the optional surcharge?
I think I would.
You think you would?
I definitely think I would.
Okay.
Because you know how sometimes at the bottom of a bill you'll see like their suggested tip? And it's for me, I always think it's significantly lower than the amount that I probably would have tipped, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you look at it, you're like, wait, what? They're getting gypped. I'm not going to give them their suggested tip amount at the bottom. So if I saw for health insurance, yeah. I mean, it's like a dollar. It was
$1.69.
Yeah. I mean, if it was like $25, I'm going to go,
yeah. Right. So
a dollar.
Right. A dollar, I feel like I wouldn't have complained. I would have said, okay, sure, I'll pay the $1.69. to help in the smallest, like literally the smallest way possible for these people to have their health insurance. So when he put this tweet out there, as you may imagine, he got excoriated, which is really what the medium is for, right? It's for people to post things and then for people to subtweet hateful things at celebrities, right? Isn't that what Twitter is for?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Right. So then this happened and Ravel got just destroyed. And so it made me think, would I pay for the surcharge, and I think that I would. But then it led me to this greater conversation, which Ro and Anna were talking about last week here on WGN, where there are Chicago aldermen that are putting together this legislation idea, which would pay restaurant workers minimum wage across the board. Right now, you might not be familiar, but many restaurant servers are sort of paid a base wage of half of what minimum wage would be, with the idea that they make up the rest and then some in tips. And they had Sam Toya, who is the CEO of the Illinois Restaurant Association, on their show last week in the afternoon on WGN. And it was a very interesting interview because he talked about in this interview how, you know, there's basically, even if these people are paid well below the actual minimum wage, which is about $13, that they're always going to be paid minimum wage. So regardless of what the tip pool ends up being, that they always have to be at least paid minimum wage. But the idea of the legislation is that, you know, sometimes you have a good week, you make way more in tips. Sometimes you don't have as good of a week. So there's a lot of fluctuation in how these people get paid. And then it led to the question of, well, if everyone's getting paid minimum wage, then are people going to make more money or less money working in restaurants?
The average wage person makes anywhere from $19 to $39 an hour. That's the average, 19 to 39. Some of these steakhouses, like you said, they're making six figures. In America, it's always been about tipping. You know what I mean? Once, you know, over the next, you know, if we get away with the tip wage, what will happen is that tipping will kind of go away. And people won't make as much money as they make now. Bartenders and wait staff and busboys will not make the kind of money that they make now.
So that was his perspective. There are others that feel that at least if everyone is paid minimum wage across the board, that at least servers and restaurants know what they're being paid. But then if everyone's making minimum wage and tips start to go away, that may not be the best thing for these restaurant workers. So I was starting to think about, like, what ways would you be willing to pay a little extra in a restaurant? Like, if you knew that every server was making minimum wage, do you think that you would tip less because you know that they're less dependent on your tip? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I'm really curious to know how people would handle this. Like, when I go to restaurants, and my wife and I are definitely foodies, and we like to go try new different places, I always feel like as long as the service is good, and I feel like I have a good experience, we always try to give a nice tip, because I know that these people work really hard, and I have friends that have worked in the restaurant industry, and I know how much they depend on it. And so I just find it interesting that, and I know that Darren Revelle was just trying to, like, make a joke, but most of the time when you make a joke on Twitter, if it's not really that funny, you're going to get crushed, and he got crushed. But, like, it wouldn't even, I don't think that I would have even thought for a second, oh, well, I'm not paying a $1.69 optional health insurance surcharge. I would have said, yeah, sure, okay, for $1.69. No, if it was $15, then no, I probably wouldn't do it. But if you're asking me to chip in just a little bit onto my meal so I know that these people are going to get insurance, I feel like I wouldn't complain about this, but I don't know.
Right. No, exactly. I totally agree with you. It's just one of those things where you see it on your bill, though. I think it just shocks you. You know, I wonder if that's why he tweeted it, because, you know, Twitter's a, you know, knee-jerk reaction. You see something, you tweet it, and then later you're like, oh, I finally get it, or oh, whatever. So I wonder if that was part of what his situation was.
I mean, I think he was trying to be funny, but people did not think it was funny, and he got crunched. And then it just made me think, what are the things that you would be fine with paying for? And if you found out that all restaurant workers now are making a higher wage and are less dependent on your tips, it's okay to be honest. We're on the radio. No one's coming after you. Would you decide that you don't want to tip nearly as much or at all? In Europe, they don't tip. 312-981-7200. Quick timeout. News coming up with Roger on WGN. 720 WGN, just after 11 o'clock. Jordan Bernfield with you. Nice to have you along for the show tonight here until 1 a.m. So here for the next couple of hours. Ashley Byhun is our producer. Roger Badish in the newsroom. We're all hanging out with you. 312-981-7200 is the telephone number if you'd like to get in touch with the show. You can also call or text using this number, which I'm getting used to. This is pretty interesting. So right before the break, we were talking about how sports business reporter Darren Revelle had this tweet where he showed how his receipt at a restaurant in Chicago, Rami, really good sushi spot, had at the bottom an itemized line that said that it was for health insurance for the people that were working in the restaurant. And he paid $94 for his food. There was a $1.68 health surcharge or health insurance charge that they included. And then when he posted this, it launched into a big viral Twitter discussion about what's acceptable. And then it made me think, listening to the station last week when Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantes were talking about the legislation that is being discussed in Chicago and in the state of Illinois about the potential for restaurant workers to all be paid minimum wage, as opposed to some servers are paid sort of half of that, and then they make up the rest of their money plus more in tips. So if the tip wage were to go away, how this would affect people that work in restaurants, and furthermore, what you'd be willing to pay if you knew that restaurant workers were all getting paid minimum wage at least and weren't as dependent on the tips as they are. Now, in Europe, it's interesting. Whenever I've traveled to Europe, because it's not custom to tip there, obviously these people are paid in different ways than they are here. They're not relying on tips. And so usually you don't tip in European restaurants unless you feel like your service was exemplary and you want to make some kind of statement to the people that served you that your food was great or the service was great or what have you. Or you're an American and you're used to tipping and they don't correct you because it's like, oh, they're going to give you 20% on top. Great. But I'm wondering, would you stop tipping or would you tip less if you knew that people were less dependent on tips? And what things on a receipt, if you saw them, would you feel comfortable paying for or would you not want to pay for? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 630 texter says, when I was a waitress at a bar restaurant, I would bring home on average between $200 and $400 in tips. No way I would have brought in that type of money if I was making minimum wage, because I truly believe people all start tipping less and eventually not tipping at all as the generations fade out. No way I would want to do all that work for minimum wage. That's the other side of this argument. There are aldermen who are saying, hey, let's even things out. Let's have everyone make minimum wage so that you don't have good weeks and bad weeks or good days and bad days. You always know what you're making. The problem is, it seems like, and Sam Toya from the Illinois Restaurant Association was saying, that people will probably make less because people would tip less. And as I think about it, frankly, I think I would probably tip less if I knew. I think I would still tip because I think it's customary. And I think until the custom of tipping goes away in this country, which I don't think we're at that point, this is probably years and years from now. But if 20 years from now, let's say, people don't tip in restaurants anymore because it's all regulated and everyone is making minimum wage or better, then that's fine. But I think for now, at least if it changed, like if you told me that this changed tomorrow and all the restaurants in Chicago are now minimum wage restaurant employees, I think I would notice that my food would cost more, right? And I think I would notice that everything just got more expensive. And so I think I would probably want to tip less, but I still think I'd probably tip. What about you? 312-981-7200. Roger, would you tip?
Yeah, I would, because I'm old fashioned. But I would tip accordingly.
Yeah.
I've been in places where services has been horrible, and I've given a cursory tip, and I've complained to the management. There are restaurants I've been in, and the service has been fantastic. Food is fantastic. And my wife and I tip up to 25% sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm very generous with my tipping because it was well worth the experience. Now, we talk about just the servers getting tips. In the, I want to say finer restaurants, not necessarily finer, but in larger restaurants, it's not just the wait staff that is getting the tip.
Right.
That money is being divided up amongst the wait staff.
And the back person, of the house.
The back of the house, the mm-hmm. people who clean the table, who are making less than minimum wage, the people who bring the food out. Not the waiters and waitresses, because they don't necessarily bring the food out in some of the larger restaurants.
Right.
So you've got those people. Now, a lot of the restaurants, the bigger ones, they now have minimum number of employees that require them to carry health insurance. And they put that into the price of the food. There are places that are smaller. Maybe the wait staff does everything, cleans the table, brings the food out. Make sure that you've got enough water and bread on your table, and they have so few employees they don't have to have health insurance. So now you're having minimum wage. You have to cover that in the price of the food, and maybe some smaller restaurants. Now that you've got to pay minimum wage, maybe you hire a couple of extra people to help out.
Yeah. And you know the other thing too, Roger, and that this is one of the things that's been talked about in this legislation, is this: if this were to change in Chicago, this might hurt restaurants in Chicago, and people might start wanting to go to the suburbs where this is less so. Because if the cost of food is going to go up, right, then people might go, well, maybe I'll leave the city and go to my nice dinner out somewhere where it's the way it always was.
Well, the perception in the suburbs is that it's less expensive and fancier than what you might find in Chicago. I mean, that's a perception.
Yes.
So, but I don't think if this goes in Chicago, then how far will it go? In other words, restaurant workers in the suburbs, restaurant workers in the state, how far will this now go?
Yeah.
Will it build up steam and eventually be everywhere?
I wonder how it would also affect people who, I mean, I would say my wife and I dine out probably more than the average person because we're into that sort of thing. We like trying different restaurants and different neighborhoods and whatever. So I would say we're probably definitely above average in terms of the amount that we might go out and try restaurants. But I feel like people like us might go less if all of a sudden the food costs are much higher. However, I guess there's always the catch-22, right? If the food costs are higher, but I can tip less, that's probably better for me. But, you know, we're getting another text here, 219. He says, I'm a career server in Chicago. I can tell you a majority of us absolutely do not want the higher hourly, and the guests shouldn't have to pay more based on administrative costs. Only bad servers want more per hour. That's Justin from Portage checking in, and we appreciate
that. Now, here's another side to that, though.
Yeah.
So, you know that in the past, long time ago, servers didn't have to pay taxes on their tips.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how management got away with not paying them a lot of money. Then the law changed, and servers are required to pay on their tips, and the government doesn't know how much each person makes, so they average things out. It's really a pain in the rear to do all that. I think what is going to happen here now is you're going to get minimum wage and less tips. You're going to end up making less. You're going to be reporting more because now you're at minimum wage. Now that's reportable. You can't not report it.
Right. And there are some people in this model that currently exists. You know, one of the things, and I didn't pull this cut from the interview for the sake of this discussion, but Sam Toya from the Illinois Restaurant Association talked about how if you work in a nice steakhouse, let's say, you know, an upper echelon restaurant, some of these servers can make six-figure livings
easily.
They work there, and they are, you know, they're obviously bigger bills, but they're getting bigger tips. And so split amongst everyone, if they're good at their jobs, you know, we've all been to a steakhouse where the you know, the server will give you his card or her card, right? Mm-hmm. And it's hey, if you need a table, you call me and I'll take care of you. And that's how those people, I mean, those people can make really good livings.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wonder, I mean, I get where people were coming from on this. I do. I don't think that the aldermen were like, let's screw everyone that works in a restaurant and by paying them more, right? I think mm-hmm. that their idea came from a place that was good. But I think that when we actually think about it, the tip structure as it is, I mean, from a lot of the texters that we're getting and some of the callers that were calling in to Ro and Anna when they talked about this last mm-hmm. week and some of the people I've spoken to, it does seem that if you're really good at being a server, you're going to make a lot of money under this model, even if you're making a base of $6.40 an hour, whatever it exactly is, right? So it incentivizes mm-hmm. you to be good at what you do. And, you know, if somebody working at a bar is putting in all these hours in a new structure and they're not getting any tips, you know, do you want to work at a bar, right? A lot of people work at bars because they're like, if I'm good at it, I'm going to make a lot of money doing this.
Mm-hmm.
It's all interesting to think about. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. If you want to weigh in on this conversation, what are things that you'd be willing to tip for if they were added onto a bill? What would you not be willing to tip on? And if you knew that everyone in a restaurant is making minimum wage at least, do you think that we would become more like Europeans and not want to tip anymore? 312-981-7200. Jordan Bernfield with you here until 1 o'clock on WGN. WGN, Jordan Bernfield hanging out with you until 1 o'clock tonight, or tomorrow, I guess, right? Technically. It's always weird when you're on one of these shifts that goes past midnight.
Yeah.
I mean, Roger, you're like the king of this, right?
Yeah, but yeah.
Do you say tonight? Do you say this? Do you say tomorrow?
Well, you say tonight until midnight, and then it's kind of weird. You're right.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people who are up with us through midnight still consider it tonight.
Yes.
As opposed to being, it's 12 and 15 seconds. It's now Saturday. Well, technically it is, but it's still nighttime.
Yeah. It's
still tonight.
In my younger years when I would be out usually well past this time,
mm-hmm.
I never thought of it. I mean, you know that it's the next day, but you don't think of it that way, right?
Sure.
Like if I roll home at 2 o'clock in the morning, those days are dwindling as the years go on.
Yes.
But, you know, like on those days, I would always, you just don't think of it that way.
No.
So, yes, we'll be here until 1 o'clock tomorrow. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I'm going to try
Saturday.
To
say Saturday. Yeah. 1 o'clock Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday.
Or just 1 o'clock.
I appreciate this, Roger.
We
have a 630 texter saying, "Hi, guys, this is an interesting conversation. I am a lifelong career server, but I've been on the other side as the manager over the last few years, and a lot of restaurants have stopped putting auto gratuity on checks because that faxes, I think he meant taxes, and being mm-hmm. reported to the federal government sell the restaurant and they don't have to pay taxes on it now. With that said, over the years, there is no way of getting away from not paying your income tax. If it is on a credit card, there's a record that goes into our Social Security number ID. However, the restaurant tracks all of that, and it's all reported with the credit card, and everything comes on it. So over the years, cash tipping has diminished, especially now that the majority of people don't even carry cash anymore. So that's becoming more of a myth. So how much you can hide from the government if the credit card has to be reported?" That's interesting,
too. That's true, yeah. I never thought of that.
Tip with cash versus a credit card.
Yeah.
Because I have to admit, I'm one of those millennials. And I don't have, my wife actually makes fun of me because I have more cash on me than I think the typical millennial, but I don't carry a lot of cash. Typically, I tip, you know, on the credit card. I mean, we pay for most things with the credit card,
mm-hmm.
and I just tip on that. But I guess that's reported, right? So
the
big tip that they don't have to report in cash, that has to happen way less than it used to.
Well, less and less people are doing that. You're right. I never thought about the credit card thing.
Yeah.
Being old-fashioned, I was always taught always carry enough money in your pocket in case of an emergency. So if you are going out and you want the waiter, waitress, the back-of-the-house staff to share in your enjoyment of the meal via a tip, then you might want to go ahead and just leave cash, because that not will not be on the bill. Yeah, as a tip. In other words, they'll say, well, how much would you like to leave it as a tip? Well, I'm just paying the bill.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm just paying the bill. I know what server took care of me, server 22.
Right. So that would be
interesting.
But there's
no tracking of the cash that I left on the table.
Right. So when you leave the cash on the table, that is probably the best way to pay the servers.
Right. To honor them for good service, you know.
Right. Maybe I got to carry a little bit more cash.
A little more cash.
All right. So I want to ask both of you this, Ashley and Roger. If when you go to a restaurant, if you saw something like Darren Revell saw at the bottom of his bill, like a health insurance charge, or what kind of things would you see at the bottom of a bill and say, yeah, I'm okay with paying for that?
Like an something yes. additional than the food
if they,
costs.
Yes, if they put another line item on there and it said, I don't know, health insurance cost or, you know, were... I mean, because, like, they're obviously... All these tips, anything that you pay, I mean, the food cost, it's all built in that you're paying for something inherently, right?
Right.
You're paying for the place to stay open.
You're paying for the electricity. You're paying for the water. You're paying for the garbage pickup. You're paying for the gas to fire up the stoves. You're paying for whatever, the custodian to clean the bathrooms and the people to come in at night and make sure the carpets are cleaned and vacuumed and neat. So, I would pay. I don't want to know what I'm paying for, to be honest with you.
Right.
I don't want to see that charge at the bottom. Go ahead and put it in the price. I'm okay with that.
Yes.
I know I'm going to pay money when I go out. I will pay what you have on the menu, and I will keep paying that every time I come back if what you serve me is good, if the service is good, and if the evening is pleasant. If it is not on any one of those three things, I'm not coming back to give you my money.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough. It's interesting that at Arami, they put that, and it was, to be fair to them, there was an optional charge, so you didn't have to pay, Darren Revell did not have to pay $1.69 if he didn't want to.
Okay, I didn't know it was optional.
It was an optional charge for health insurance, but it said as a line item, health insurance. So that's interesting. I mean, they could have just added that somewhere in the bill.
Sure.
So you didn't know you were paying for it. But the fact that it was on there, you know, he made a deal out of it and then got annihilated for it because it sounds heartless. But at the same time, I bet you, you're right. Most people, if you told them after the fact, hey, that just paid for somebody's health insurance, you probably feel good about it. But the fact that it's on there makes you have to decide whether you want to give that extra couple bucks, even if it is only an extra couple bucks.
Yeah, good point.
630 texter says, or no, that would, I picked the wrong text right there. That is not one I can
probably remember. You can't do that one, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Well, 773 texter says, we've given the cash to the busboy that they do a lot of work. That's really nice. I mean, I...
Separately, yeah. Because
I don't think
you don't
I've
know.
Ever done that.
Well, and that's a great idea, because you don't know how good your wait staff is. You don't know if they actually split their money or give a fair share to the people who clean up or the person who brings out the food.
Yeah.
I think that's appropriate.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to be paying them 20% or 25%.
Right, but give them a little something.
Give them
something.
A couple of bucks, a little something-something. And say thank you very much, because you know how some restaurants, they bring the food out and then you don't see anyone for an hour. And you might want to make sure that, you know, they keep checking up on you.
Yeah. 630, or we have a caller from the 630. We have Nikki from the Burbs. He is joining us on WGN. Hey, Nikki.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Fine. This is a really interesting conversation.
Thanks.
I've been serving for years, and I've watched how the tipping game has changed from reporting to tipping out, so to speak. What caught my attention is you're talking about, I'm in a corporate restaurant, and a lot of them do it when the servers are tipped at the end of the night. We have to tip out a percentage of our sales, and that gets tipped off, then ours gets broken up to our bartenders, the support staff. They get tipped from us.
I see. So it keeps getting split more and more and more and more and more until it finally gets to the end.
Everybody, it kind of all is like you're, you know, if your busser gets something, your, they call them food runners, get something down the nicer restaurants. If
right.
The sommelier, they get a percentage. Your bar staff gets a percentage. So everybody's getting a little bit of it. It's not just, you know, if you give the server 20%, whether it's cash or on a credit card, X amount of dollars of my total sales for the night, I have to put over on there for tipping.
Very interesting. Thank you for sharing, Nikki. I really appreciate your call. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. By the way, catch Living Healthy Chicago this Saturday at 9 a.m. Learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans with health and fitness. Living Healthy Saturday, 9 a.m. on WGN TV. It's really interesting to talk about because you never think about this stuff when you're at a restaurant, right? You think like, hey, I'm sitting down, they're bringing me food, I'm leaving my 15 to 20% at the end of the night. You don't think about it. But the way that this all gets split up, and if restaurant workers were to start to be paid minimum wage and all of a sudden that tip money starts to go away, now, how is that going to affect the restaurant business? I think it's going to affect the restaurant business in a variety of ways, and I don't think that it would all be good for the people that work at these restaurants based on everything that I've been told by you, the listener, and just by people that I know that work in the restaurant business. Coming up on the show, I got into one of these crazy rabbit holes, and I found 15 of the weirdest iPhone apps that you didn't know exist. I'll explain how I got into said rabbit hole, and it also connects to our conversation about food. That's coming up after the news. The news is sponsored by Builder Supply Outlet. Here is Roger Babbitt. What I want. 11:34, 720 WGN. Jordan Bernfield with you here tonight and taking you up to 1 a.m. And we've been talking a lot about food on this program. If you can't tell, I am a foodie. That is one of the things that I'm definitely passionate about besides sports. And so I like talking about these different things. And so I go to Eater Chicago often and I read the latest news on food. And I happened to come across an article within the last day or so about Roots Pizza, which is one of my favorite places to go. There's a location that's right near my house. And if you've never been to Roots Pizza, awesome place. They've got awesome mozzarella sticks, great pizza, all that stuff. They're not paying me to say this. I just like their food. So there's an article about how they invested $55,000 to create a new smartphone app, which will have more features as it goes along. And I happen to download the app today because I figure I go there enough that I might as well have the application. And it does a lot of cool things. You know, you can eventually, you're going to be able to pay using the app, and then you can just go pick up your pizza and everything is taken care of through the app. So all of us, you just literally will be able to drive up to a location. They bring out your food. You take it and you go. Like, there's a bunch of these different features where you can pay through Apple Pay using the app, so you don't have to sit there all evening waiting for a server to come back and hand you a check. And they've really tried to make it into something where at any of their locations, if you have the app and you go there enough, then it's worth having because it will give you a bunch of little perks. But then as I started to think about this, it got me into this rabbit hole because I started to think about, okay, well, I like Roots Pizza and I go there, I guess, enough. I mean, every couple of months, I would say we probably get dinner from there or go there. But how many restaurant apps would I really want? You know, we started out where we had, all of a sudden we get smartphones, right? And then there's an app for that. There's an app for everything. And now, like, if you're like me, I have probably, I don't know, 5 pages, if not more, of apps. But I would say that I use most of them extremely infrequently, and I only have them for like the rare occasion in which I dine in some restaurant and I want to get my points. Or I would say I use my banking apps and I use my social media apps and I use, a few things here and there on a regular basis, like the radio streaming apps I use. I'm not just saying that because I work here, but I'm saying like I actually am one of the people that listens to streaming radio and I'll put it on while I'm cooking or something. So I use those, but I just figure like there's so many apps out there now. Is it really the smartest idea to have apps for everything? So then I started thinking, well, what kind of apps are out there? Because if you ever go on the App Store, whether you have an iPhone or an Android or any of these smartphones, there's a billion freaking apps out there. And let me tell you something. There are some weird apps. Are you guys ready for some of the weirdest apps?
I am ready for some weird apps.
Okay. Now, I found this article called The 15 Weird iPhone Apps You Didn't Know Exist. Now, after I tell you about these, you tell me if you are really going to want any of these apps.
Right.
Number 15 is called Rubby Bird. This app is exactly what it sounds like, quoting from the article. You can open up an animation of a brilliant yellow animated bird and you rub him. A countdown screen appears as you begin to rub the bird. As you rub, the bird makes squawking sounds, and a robotic yet oddly calming voice urges you on with such words as rub the duck and good job, keep rubbing the bird. Once you've rubbed the bird a certain amount of time, you can share your score and play again. The game and play is called, interestingly enough, Rub Sessions, which that sounds dirty, and lasts for a minimum of 15 sessions. As strange as this app is, it's oddly addictive, so give it a rub. I don't know, I think I'm good. If you were like on the train and you saw somebody playing Rubby Bird, I mean, it would be, could you just imagine the visual? Somebody's holding their phone up and just rubbing the phone incessantly?
You get points, which is confusing, because what are you getting graded on?
I don't even know.
How well you rub the bird.
That's
maybe
good.
There's certain areas of the bird where you get more points and then less points in other areas. What if you, like, you're rubbing the bird and your finger slips into the area around the bird? Now you get no points.
Right. I mean, I don't know if this is for coordination exercise or
what are you coordinating?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of how bored I would have to be
Very bored.
Download Rubby Bird and say, this is how I'm going to spend the minutes of my life.
Surely there are more important and life-affirming things that you could do in the few moments that you would get 15 points on Rubby Bird where no one cared.
True, but I mean, this does show that humanity is full of insanity, right? Okay, so
I like that.
There's one called Happy Oink. Okay,
you rubbing a pig now?
Basically, yes. This bizarre yet oddly moving app opens with a pig animated graphic and text that states, "Poor piglet, everyone's gone. You have to pet the virtual pig for her to move. You can teach the pig more movements as she moves around in this virtual world, eating and eventually having piglets. She becomes more cheerful and less sad. The pig even has friends visit, with the app featuring seasonal changes. The piglets she has soon begin to play with each other. And again, it may sound addictive, but this is allegedly, according to the article, soothing, like Rubby Bird."
No.
So what was the thought process here? We're like, they're sitting around a table. They're like, well, we got Rubby Bird, but I really think you need to rub a pig. I think somebody needs to make a pig app where you rub a pig.
Remember the toy that kids had quite a number of years ago before we started having all these smartphone apps? I think it was the Tagamuchi or Tagamuchi.
Oh, Tamagotchi?
Tamagotchi, where you had your
baby.
But I
like what you called it better.
Thank you. You had to, like, feed the animal, whatever, and you had to let it sleep, and you had to do stuff.
It does sound like that.
Yeah, and that's exactly what that is.
I mean, Ashley, you seem younger than me. Were you in the Tamagotchi generation?
No, but
no,
I knew about it.
I missed that.
Okay.
I missed that one. This one sounds sad, though.
It does sound a little sad.
It's a sad little piglet.
It says you make it happy by doing all these things. So I wonder if that's the goal. You're trying to make the pig happy. But now my question is, what happens if you don't?
I mean, this is what humans are doing. They are playing with these apps. Okay, there's
I want an app to make the human happy. The pig.
Right. Well, there's there's one called Bristler where it's about if you're a fan of stroking beards, it finds other people, okay? It's an app exclusively for those of you out there who are looking for beards. It's actually a dating app, and it's set up to filter by age, their distance from you, and, of course, their bearded status. So believe it or not, over 500,000 people have connected using this app, and it's used in over 100 cities worldwide. The app even has a clever Lothario detector where it lets you know if the message sender has sent the same message to others. So, I've seen that there are dating apps for everyone. Apparently, there's a dating app for people with beards.
All people with beards, or?
I mean, people who are fans of beards and stroking beards. I'm just going to tell you what it is, and you can decide. It's called iFart.
Love it.
And Roger made the first sound for the iFart.
That's because I was, is that the sound?
Well, iFart is.
I was just like laughing hysterically over this.
This one is an electronic whoopee cushion basically to prank your friends. So the screen.
That's all it is. Yes. Okay, it's a sound machine.
Yeah,
that's all.
So
okay.
The screen displays a red button, which you can press to deliver your flatulent sound of choice. But there are also a variety of flatulence you can choose from, including Jack the Ripper, Bubbler, and Howard the Duck. And you can set the fart for however long you wish, making it better than a whoopee cushion.
I like this one. This one I could see use for.
I feel like when I was in junior high, this would have been amazing.
Oh, come on. Farts are so funny.
Are funny.
No matter how old you are, farts are hilarious.
But you have to work in the right office setting.
That's true.
I feel like you could do this in a radio station, but in a corporate office, busting out the iFart app, that's probably your last day. At a radio station, it'd be great content. There'd be people around like clapping and laughing, I feel like. Right?
Very true. Very true. Big fan of this app. I think I might download it.
This one I actually think is pretty hilarious. This one is called Demotivational Picks. So, like, you know how I feel like a lot of people passive-aggressively post things to Instagram, or they post, like, nice motivational quotes.
Oh, yeah.
Or they post, you know, you see those, like, those memes on the internet with motivation. So, these are the opposite. So, the Demotivational Picks app puts a clever twist on the often-used motivational tool by specifically providing the user with demotivational pictures. The creators of this app also made funny pics, so they clearly know what they're doing. There's tens of thousands of photos. I actually saw one on the article where it says, "You think you're going to win the championship? Ha, 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 ha." I feel like that one would have worked for the Cubs until 2016.
Yeah.
Fortunately, they won. I mean,
that's a funny one. That's a funny one, because you're right. We're my timeline is overwhelmed every day on Facebook with memes and sayings and pictures that are meant to encourage you and relax you and give you confidence and motivate you. And I think this one is kind of a nice tongue-in-cheek app. I don't think I need an app to
tell myself that I suck.
I already know that. Please, come on.
I mean, like, I don't need an app to tell me when I suck. I can just have my boss send a terse email.
Yeah, tell me something I don't know. Yeah, right.
Right. Or I just have the people of Twitter tell me how much I suck after every broadcast I do. Although it's funny, I feel like when I do games on television, people generally send nice tweets.
Oh, really?
When you do a radio show, that's where the real evisceration comes out.
Oh,
I don't know what it is.
I didn't know there would be a difference necessarily.
Maybe
I mean,
it's the personal nature of this medium that, you know, all you have is the voice and you're connecting with people on this way.
You're seen on these broadcasts on TV.
Yeah, when
they can see you.
Yeah, like when I do play-by-play.
Yeah.
And I'm on screen for 30 seconds, but the rest of the game, you know, you're just narrating over the game.
Yeah, you're the voice, yeah.
And I feel like generally I don't get like excoriated, but on Twitter, you know, or if you do a radio show and you have one opinion that doesn't jive with someone, man, you get crushed. Mm. And instead, I'll just download the Demotivational Picks app and I'll be like, you're right, I do
there
suck.
You go.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So here's one for you. Now, brace yourself for this one.
All right.
Places I've pooped.
I'm sorry, that sounded like the fart one again.
Yes, though different. Again, they sat around a table in a boardroom and they're like, you know, we have a fart one, but we could really use the poop one.
Yeah.
The title of this app is silly and strange, but it does serve a very useful purpose. How many times have you been out and about when the urge to go suddenly strikes you, yet you have no idea where the bathroom is? Places I've pooped can save you time and stress by helping you locate the nearest restroom.
Oh, well, see, so, now the title is not exactly what the app is
correct.
About.
So, but, like, I don't understand the idea. I understand the idea of helping you find an acceptable public toilet, but the idea that it's going to document all these places.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, like, this also sort of steals. Did you ever see the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode when the Seinfeld cast was in it?
No.
So in the episode, you know, like, that was how they did the Seinfeld reunion. Instead of doing it, they all came back on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right.
And in that episode, George came up with an iPhone app called the iToilet, which was supposed to help you find the nearest acceptable public bathroom. I think they're ripping them off. I think Places I've Pooped was watching the episode and decided we need this in our lives.
Yeah.
I'd ask for
some lights on that.
I wonder if it's like Yelp. Do you give reviews?
Yeah, you give reviews like, this bathroom, don't use it. This one's phenomenal. Smells great.
Right.
The door doesn't lock. Be careful.
Right. That's true.
Don't go to the second stall.
I feel like if the door didn't lock, that would basically put it down to at least 1.5 stars.
At least.
I mean, if you got to go, you got to go. Just put your foot up against the door.
I mean, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, here's another one for you. Run pee.
No, please.
We've
no
all
more.
Been there. You're sitting in a movie theater. Now, this is different than what you thought it would be. You're sitting in a movie theater watching the most crucial part of a fantastic movie when your bladder begins to scream. You desperately have to go, but you don't want to miss a moment of the masterpiece before you. Well, there's an app for that. I feel like, I mean, Jennings just left, but I feel like we need this great David Jennings baritone
voice to
give us the read for this.
Oh,
the Run Pee app lets you know the best time to take a bathroom break from your favorite flick, and you won't even have to miss the good parts. Even better, the app keeps its database updated so you can be abreast of the best time to go with newer releases. So it's basically saying, like, if you want to watch a movie that stinks that you have to get up and pee during, then here are the movies. Right? Because I feel like if I like a movie, I don't want to get up during the movie.
Right. Do they have people at this app that have watched these movies and timed them out?
Yes.
So that, all right, now...
So it's saying, like, an hour in, and this scene, you can get up and go, and you can go to the bathroom.
Yeah. I might use.
Download Run Pee.
Because, you know, so when you want to make the decision to go to a movie, so you got to check the app that tells you what the movie times are, right?
Yeah.
You want to know when you can get the discounts, you know, what time you got to be there before to get the discounts. And then, well, I can't go see this movie because, you know, it says I got to go pee at 20 minutes into it, and I'm peeing right before I get there. So it's kind of a waste of time for me.
Right.
So,
where do these people go to the movies? Most movie theaters that I go to, there are enough acceptable places to go to the washroom in the public space that I will go before I go into the movie.
Exactly.
Like, there's enough of them. It's not like it's a one-er.
Right.
You know, you can go in and go and then go watch the movie. I don't feel like I need Run Pee. I am not downloading this app.
Okay.
Now I'm getting fired up. Okay, here's one. This one seems like it came out literally out of a Curb Your Enthusiasm or a Seinfeld. Fake an excuse. Now, this app, the description is, how many times have you been in a conversation you desperately wanted to get out of, maybe this one, and you answer the phone to someone you don't really want to talk to? Well, fake an excuse can help you get out of the dreaded conversation. It supplies over 40 realistic background sounds to get you off the phone. Being pulled over, weak signal, even a bee attack. It doesn't matter, though, because it provides the excuse for you. You just select the excuse sound you want, hit the start excuse button, and there you go. You have your valid excuse for getting off the phone.
You know, that plays on what used to happen in the old days, and they even have movies where this is part of the movie, where the husband is in a bar instead of being at home, And he calls home and says, "Honey, I'm still at the office." And all the guys at the in the bar are doing office sounds as a background. You know, you don't hear any clinking of glasses or people being drunk or anything. They're in the office, and some guy will come in and says, "Hey, Bob, you got that report for me?" Stuff like that.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, it was the excuse. And this plays on that kind of a theme, and it's pretty cool.
Well, so my brain always goes to Seinfeld episodes, but this is one of the ones that's sort of outdated. But remember, there was a Seinfeld where Elaine had this friend that she would call, but it was back when people didn't have cell phones. And so, like, she'd call and the husband always answered the phone, and she couldn't get the husband off the phone. So then she could never call her friend because the husband would talk her ear off.
Right.
And she'd always be trying to get rid of the husband and, like, try to call him when she knew he wasn't home so she could talk to the friend. I feel like you've got an app for that now.
There you go.
You've got the excuse app.
Done and done.
By the way, an 847 texter says, "Sit or Squat is a great app for finding bathrooms."
Oh, that's another one?
FYI.
Oh.
And Erin in Wheaton said that she just looked up the fart app and it costs $1.99.
Oh, well, that forget that app.
Okay, so this goes back to our previous conversation. Yeah. How much would you pay for an insane app?
None. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing.
I think the most I've paid for an app was like $4.99.
I don't pay for any apps.
Zero.
None.
Okay.
The only thing I actually pay for is on my phone is Jib Jab.
Oh.
And they charge you at the end of a month or at the end of 6 months or whatever.
Jib Jab is the one that makes like the funny birthday cards, right?
Funny music videos, funny birthday cards. Yeah, where you can put people's faces on.
Yeah, those
on
are
the
good.
Yeah. Yeah, and I use it enough during the year, and I'm okay. It's like a $1.99 or 99 cents per, because they're paying royalties on the songs.
I actually, it's, you know how I know about Jib Jab? Because a friend of mine who used to work here, you probably know George Offman, right?
Yeah.
I will often get the birthday Jib Jab from George Offman.
Yeah.
They're hilarious.
Yeah.
Every time I laugh at them.
Yeah, they're very, and they keep getting new songs every so often that you can put your face or someone's face in and stuff. It's funny. I like it. So that's the only thing I'll pay for. I've got the Amazon Prime app, you know, for the video.
Yeah.
But I'm paying for that already on my Roku at home. So I'm just using the app in case I'm out and I want to watch the end of a movie I didn't get to finish at home or whatever.
I'm trying to think if I pay for it. I think the one app that I paid for was Sling Player, because if you have like a Sling Box at home, you know, you have to buy the app so that you can watch, like, if you don't have your computer to bring your, quote-unquote, bring your TV anywhere,
right?
You download the app, and then it was really so that, like, if I was out of the country, I could tune in and watch the Cubs game or something for 15
minutes. And that makes sense. Yeah. So now you're connected wherever you go, and when you have the Sling, you've already paid for the luxury of what that brings to you.
So if you don't buy the app, it was sort of like, well, what do I have this for?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you want the final one of the final ones here?
Yeah, give me the worst.
All right. Well, I don't know if this is the worst.
Oh,
I think
okay.
We've done the worst. But there's one called Drunk Dial No. So, Ashley, when you were a college student, would you say you were a drunk dialer or were you not a drunk dialer?
I was not a drunk dialer, but I was a drunk dialer stopper. Like, I would stop my friends
that's
from making
good.
The drunk dials.
I was a little bit of a drunk dialer, but a friend of mine is a huge, notorious drunk dialer. And, like, I'm 34, and I would say within the last 2 years, I got a drunk dial from this friend. He just is a big drunk dialer, so he needs this app. Everyone at some point has needed the Drunk Dial No, which does exactly what it calls itself. After you've had a few, your fingers get surprisingly dial heavy, and the next thing you know, you've made a call you really regret. This app effectively hides contacts' phone numbers and email addresses for however long you set it. So it could be a few hours if you're going out for a night on the town, or if you have a bender planned, it could go for up to 48 hours, and you can limit all of your contacts if you're really dial-obsessed or just a select few. I feel like if I have to literally eliminate my contact list, there's probably greater problems that I have in life.
That one could be very helpful for some people, though. Like, if you really don't like your boss and you get drunk and you're like,
you drunk on your boss?
Yeah, I'm going to send my boss a strongly worded email.
Yeah, a terse, misspelled email.
Yeah,
that'll show them. Hey, were you drunk? Or can you not spell? Yeah. Drunk dial. I mean, literally, there is an app for everything, as we figured out.
That's wild.
I think
that's where we've missed our calling. We need to start finding it and make money off this thing.
I mean, I think you're right. Listen, we're not going to get rich in radio, so we better find something else to do.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
all right. Coming up after the midnight news, Kevin Powell from our great staff here at WGN is going to join me to talk some Bears, some Blackhawks, some Cubs and Sox. We're going to jump all over the sports page with Kevin Powell next on WGN. Welcome back, 720 WGN. Jordan Bernfield with you tonight, or should I say tomorrow, as we embark on the Saturday morning, I guess it would be. But when you're on this shift, you never really know what time it is. Really, when you work in a radio station, you never know what time it is. And my next guest is the esteemed afternoon sports anchor here on 720 WGN. You know his voice because you hear him all the time with Ro Khan and on all the other sports programming on this station. He is my friend Kevin Powell. This is great because I have known you a long time. Like when you started out at this station, I remember when you came aboard. Mm-hmm. And now look at you. You're just, you've got the sports world dominated.
I don't know about that, but I'm certainly having some fun. And yeah, I remember when I first started, you were doing a ton of sports stuff here.
Yeah.
I remember one night, I think you were doing like a late shift something.
That sounds about right.
And then you had the morning show. I think you're filling in for Dave on the morning show. So you brought an inflatable mattress, slept in the sports studio, which was much larger back at Trip Tower than the one we have now. And you inflated it, and you slept there, and woke up, and then went right back to the desk. I was like, okay, all right.
I did do that, and actually, I think that was on. Well, I did this like two or three times. Because you know how it is. When you're starting out, you got to do anything.
You say yes to everything.
You say yes to everything. Right. Yeah. So I
still do that. You still got to do it forever, basically.
Basically, forever. Right. So I remember, I think that was the 3rd of July going into the 4th of July.
Okay.
And the reason why I think I remember that it was the case is because, you know, I slept here for like 3 hours. And let's just say, even though I set up the mattress in the old sports studio, I mean, it was quiet because one thing that's good about radio stations is every room is soundproof.
Right.
So I was able to sleep for about 3 hours, but then I was back on the air, basically in my PJs. And I remember leaving there after my shift in the morning, came home and slept for like 3 hours, and then went to a concert that night.
Good Lord.
And I was so tired at the concert.
I bet.
Like, it's a weird
coffee at a concert.
Well, it's like a weird experience when you're at a concert where there are speakers that are blaring music loudly, but you're so tired you're ready to fall asleep.
When I was doing, I produced for Cochran for a while, for 2.5 years, and when you do that shift, this is certainly not me complaining. I guess we're just riffing here on our radio days as we kind of get these careers going. Tired all the time.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. I could take a nap. I was tired. It just was always tired. There
takes years
Fridays,
off your life.
There would be Fridays where I'd produce the show and I'd be like, I'm just going to stay downtown. I'm going to power through. I'm going to go out with my buddies. And I'd be like dozing off at the bar. I'm like, I got to get out of here because I just couldn't do it, man. It takes a lot out of you.
That's amazing, though, that you would think that you could stay all day.
I tried. Yeah.
And then go out.
Yeah.
That's being young. That's what that is.
Young. I'd go up to my buddy's place in Lincoln Park, post up, and just kind of power through. It didn't always end all that well, Jordan. It really didn't.
Yes.
Being that tired, a few beers in you, it can be an ugly scene.
Yes. Well, hopefully I can stay awake until 1. That's my goal this evening. But we could talk about this forever. But let's talk a little bit about the Chicago Bears, who are in London.
Mm-hmm.
I know this because every single reporter that we know has posted some requisite picture of them, either at Heathrow or in London.
It's mandatory now, Jordan. If you're somewhere, you got to put it on social media or you weren't actually there.
Yeah. So, hello, everyone.
Yes.
So, the Bears are playing against the Oakland Raiders, who are not good, soon to no longer be Oakland Raiders. It feels like the Bears should win this game. But I think bigger than even the game is the fact that Chase Daniel will start again. It looks like Mitch Trubisky will be out another couple of weeks until after their bye week. I know that this might sound overreactionary, but I think you know that I try to at least live in the objective world.
Yes.
I think in the immediate future, the Bears are better off with Chase Daniel. Is that crazy? I'm not saying for like the long term.
Well, okay. I think if we look at it in a small sample size, it's hard to argue against that, Jordan, because when you look at Chase Daniel out there, you don't see the upside. There's a reason he's been a backup his whole career, but he's not bad necessarily. And he does, and everybody was talking about this after he went in. It's like a perfect backup. He looks poised and comfortable out there. I don't know if that's because Mitch has happy feet and the opposite of poised and comfortable, where it's like, whoa, that's what you're supposed to look like. But the talent Trubisky possesses is just so much bigger than Chase Daniel. So the question is, can you win a Super Bowl? If you're going to win a Super Bowl, don't you think you have to have Mitch Trubisky?
I think you probably...
It has to be your starting quarterback.
If I'm being honest, I don't think they can win a Super Bowl with either one.
Okay.
The thing that I'm nervous about...
Why not?
...is because I... Put it this way. If Mitch was healthy...
Yes.
...the way that the Bears are constructed, in my view, is they're a really good team that's still lacking at the quarterback position, even with their best quarterback... And I think that formula can win them enough games to be in the playoffs again, but I don't know if it can win them the last game of the season. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Once you get to the postseason.
But so you're basically saying before the season, not a whole lot's changed. So you're saying before the season, you're like, this is not a Super Bowl team?
No, because I didn't know if in year three, Mitch would take a jump. That was the one thing, because I thought if Mitch came out and looked like gangbusters early on.
Yeah.
And I know that we still only played four games.
Right.
I realize that, I mean, maybe it'll hamper his development this season because of the injury, but if he were going to be a star quarterback, I feel like this would have happened already. So the fact that he isn't a star quarterback means that defensively they're going to have to be maybe not as great as they were last week against the Vikings, but great every week, right? So if they get to a playoff game against Jared Goff, against Drew Brees, against Aaron Rodgers, against somebody in the NFC that has a good offense and a quarterback that has proven that they can get to the Super Bowl with an offense that could probably put 20 on the Bears, as good as the Bears defense is, my whole thought is, can the Bears defense be this awesome every single week? If they can be, then sure, they can win the Super Bowl. But to me, it feels like history has shown that that's really hard to do. Not that it can't happen, but it's pretty hard to see happening.
Fair points. I agree that the defense, as ferocious as they've been, look, if you're counting every week for your defense to win you a game every single week, probably in some trouble. I think the frustrating thing for Bears fans is it finally felt when Matt Nagy came to town and he brought this new culture change. I've kind of compared it to Joe Madden. Those two have talked where mm-hmm. It really was a culture change. I know it sounds stereotyped, but it sounds boring and they hammer it into our heads. But it really feels like a big time culture change with the Bears. Part of that was what has been the 100 year legacy of the Chicago Bears? Badass defense, horrible offense. It's the same story we've
yes.
seen a million times. The Urlacher led teams were great. No quarterback, not a great offense. It finally felt like, okay, we have a coach. Offensive-minded, young guru-type guy, brings in a young talent in Mitch Trubisky. There's a ton of weapons on offense, or at least we think there's a ton of weapons on offense. I think Ryan Pace, as a talent evaluator, has proven that he can identify talent. Verdict's out on Mitch Trubisky, I know, but think about all the talent.
No, I agree. But you know what the funny thing is, Kevin, is that he came here to build the Saints, and he rebuilt the Bears. He came here to build
right,
this high-flying offense.
So that's my point, where
right.
It felt like they were finally going to be this a Bears team that an offense can win you a game.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Was can an offense go out there and blow a team away and put up 35 when they need it and the defense isn't having a great day and things aren't going their way? We haven't seen that yet.
We have not. And I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying that
right.
It doesn't feel like watching them play that it's like on either side of the ball, right? If you were all offense and no defense,
yeah.
We'd be sitting here saying, well, when somebody stops them in the playoffs, are they going to be able to get a stop to win the game?
Yeah.
I think the same thing is true on the opposite side of the ball. Having watched this defense all year, they might even be better than last year. I mean, they're ferocious.
Yeah.
But, and listen, should they go out and beat the Raiders in London? I would imagine
absolutely. A much better team. No
right.
questions.
Should they rack up a number of wins against mediocre NFL teams? Absolutely, because this defense is good enough to do that. I'm just saying that what they're building for may not be possible with the quarterbacks they have.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I do think watching them is that I agree with everything you said. Nagy's a good coach. I think he's a smart guy. He's innovative. He has changed the culture. I think Pace is a good talent evaluator. But when I watch their offense, it doesn't even look like Matt Nagy is confident in Mitch Trubisky, because all they do is dink and dunk the ball. And if that's what they're going to do, Chase Daniel is at least accurate at doing that.
I think that's one of the surprising things for me, too, was the offense, where last year we saw little flashes like, whoa, look at this. And not even some of the trickery type stuff he did at the goal line and all that kind of things. It was just, okay, this is a modern day playbook. This is something we haven't seen. And honestly, the first four games for the Bears, the play calling hasn't been all that great. That's surprising to me, because Matt Nagy just seems like an innovator on the offensive side of the ball. We haven't seen that this season. I don't know if it's because defenses have figured out what they're trying to do. Matt Nagy's going to have to adapt to it. But you look at so much talent on offense, you got to figure there's going to be a breakthrough. Now, I'll say this about Mitch Trubisky, okay? Carmen called me Mark Carmen here at WGN, called me a loyal Mitch Trubisky supporter, which...
Well, he was a McCowney. I was here when he was a McCowney. You throw that back at him.
Okay, well, it's not even that. It's just that I think when I talk about Trubisky, for some people it might come off that way, as if I'm like his cheerleader. It's not the case. It's not me being loyal to Trubisky, but I have no loyalty to the guy. I don't care. Like, yeah, I cover the team. Deep down, I'm a Bears fan as well, but I'm not just some blind meatball saying he's going to be good, he's going to be good, he's going to be good.
Right.
What all I'm saying is that every story is different with these athletes and with quarterbacks. And I get it. Everyone wants to say, well, he's not Mahomes, so he sucks. Well, I don't know. That might not be the case. I know it's year three. This is second year in Matt Nagy's offense. The first year honestly almost felt like a throwaway year. And a fourth receiver was basically his top target. There was nobody. He had no offensive structure around him. None of that. It almost felt like a throwaway. Okay, last year, he had sort of some flashes. If you look at his numbers, they're actually pretty solid. Yeah. But there was enough to give you hope, but also enough to keep you skeptical about where his trajectory is going as a quarterback. So all I'm saying, and all I've been with the Trubisky situation, is patient. And I remain patient with it. I'm not one of these guys who's going to come out here and say he stinks. I'm not going to harp on the Mahomes decision or the Deshaun Watson decision. Also, people that continue to compare Trubisky and Mahomes, just shut up. It's over and done with. Okay, because they did screw that up. Okay, but let me say, okay, yeah. I know. That's yes. All been acknowledged.
Yes.
But let's just say this, right? That we can sit here and say Mahomes is better than Trubisky.
Clearly.
Now and maybe and probably for the long-term future, right?
Yes.
So what do we do with that information?
Well, I think what we...
My point is this, Jordan. It's over and done with. Let's move on from it. I don't need every Monday...
I'd say Watson's
some guy
better,
be like,
too.
Did you see what Mahomes did? And did you see what Trubisky did? And Deshaun... I don't care. It's over and done with. Move on from that. It drives me nuts because there's nothing you can reverse. So I don't understand it. It's like lazy like sports talk that just blows my mind. I can't. It's like move on from it. They skipped Mahomes. They skipped Watson.
Right. It is what it is now.
It is what it is. So what's the? And it's not like you can say, look, Ryan Pace. He missed there. We think right. But he's nailed a bunch of other positions. I will say, to counter my own point, I would say that's the most important position in all of sports as a quarterback. You
Correct.
Can't miss on that.
Yes.
So I'll criticize him for that. No doubt about it. But at the same time, like, what are we going to do? Like, call for Ryan Pace? Like, are you kidding me?
No, I mean, he's done a good enough job.
Yeah, so it's like, what's the point of this Mahomes-Trubisky comparison?
Just because the
culture
sports
of 2019?
Right, we all want to be miserable.
Sports fans of 2019 are horrible. It's just so bad. The way social media is created and Hot Take Central.
Well, so now that I've got you fired up, will you stay for one more second?
Absolutely.
Here? All right, he's Kevin Powell.
I need a breather.
He's fired up about the Bears. We'll continue on this topic after this 720 WGN. Welcome back, 720 WGN. Jordan Bernfield with my friend Kevin Powell, who you, of course, hear on this station each and every weekday afternoon with Ro Khan, and you hear him all over the station with WGN Sports, and got you heated about Mitch Trubisky.
Took a water break there
Took a little water break. These studios are so nice here now.
They're
They've
beautiful.
Got all the creature comforts. Like, there's like 15 different types of water I can get over there.
All sorts of filtration systems.
It's pretty nice.
Beautiful. Yeah.
I mean, the last time I worked here, not that the studios weren't nice.
That trip tower was kind of crumbled a little bit.
Well, I mean, but like when they moved upstairs, it was pretty nice.
It was very. Yeah. The suites, everything was nice.
Yeah, it was nice. But I mean, we didn't. I mean, like I kind of like that we have 15 types of water. I got to admit, that's pretty good. So we've been talking about Trubisky. We've been talking about the Bears. I want to switch to the Blackhawks real quickly because. The Blackhawks, obviously, on WGN, they started their season today, and, you know, they didn't look good today.
Yeah.
I don't want to overreact to what we saw. It did look, in many ways, like a continuation of last season, but I think that they're going to be pretty good this year. I feel like the moves they made were not sexy, but they made sense in terms of where they are, and so... Even though they looked a defenseman short and the only game that we have to go off of today, I still feel like the Blackhawks are going to be improved. What do you think?
I would be surprised if they didn't make the playoffs. And I think the moves that you alluded to, they also didn't feel desperate either. Where in the past couple of years, you know, things they can kind of take a breath now, right? The Quinville era ended early last year, kind of, I don't want to call it turmoil, but it was them saying, you know what, we can't even risk this. Let's just do something to try to revitalize this team and get to the playoffs. That's where the Blackhawks are at. You win 3 Stanley Cups. You have the culture that John McDonough and those guys created. It's get to the playoffs, contend for a Stanley Cup. That's why it's awesome to be a Blackhawks fan right now, despite them missing the playoffs, etc. I like the moves they made. I thought they shored up the goaltending spot, where I think you're probably going to see a little bit the low taken off Corey Crawford with Robin Lehner coming to town. So I like the moves they did. I'm not going to overreact to a game in Prague for week one, you know. So no, and they have 7 straight games at home at the United Center beginning Thursday against the Sharks, which you can hear right here on WGN at 7. So nice plug. Yeah. Overall, I like where they're at. And keep in mind, this is a full offseason of Jeremy Colleton-led Blackhawks. I think it took a minute for a lot of those guys to absorb the news that Q was gone. Anytime a legend like that leaves, and this is not anything against the players about being stubborn or anything like that. Look, it's hard to consume a new message when you've been getting something for 10 years that worked and
no
won
doubt.
3 Stanley Cups. So that's just in any day life, whether it's workplace or whatever. So now the message is cleared what Jeremy Colleton wants them to do. I think the guys are buying in on it. And I'm pumped for Hawks season. I'd be surprised if they don't make the playoffs.
I agree. And I also think that when you look at the way that last year ended, I mean, they were the worst team in hockey in January. Then there was a point where they were a playoff team.
They
very
were right
briefly,
there, yes.
But they were right there.
They were a point behind.
And they found themselves pretty close to getting into the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it made me think exactly what you were saying, which is that Joel Quenneville gets fired. It shakes everybody up for a while. And then, you know, they bottomed out. And then all of a sudden they started to play pretty good hockey.
They played pretty good hockey down the last couple months of the season.
Yes, and Taves was outstanding. Kane is a magician. I mean, even today. I mean,
he's unbelievable.
Patrick Kane just does things.
It's incredible.
That pass to DeBrincat at the end of the second period.
Yes.
I mean, I don't want to say that. I don't want to overstate it because I feel like we're spoiled in that. We see him do this all the time. Mm-hmm. But the hand-eye coordination and the vision that it requires to pull off said play, it's just, he is, I feel like in our lifetimes, because we're about the same age, you see certain athletes come through town.
Yeah.
And as Chicago sports fans, it's like, you have to try to appreciate what you have. And he is one of those guys. Not to take anything away from anybody else.
Totally.
Jonathan Taves is going to have a Hall of Fame career too, but Patrick Kane is something else, man.
Hey, look, I'll gloat about Patrick Kane all day. He's just unbelievable. And it seems like he's getting better where most guys start to, you know, fall off a little bit at this age. But I completely agree. I think he hit it spot on. I go to a ton of Hawks games. We're fortunate to be the flagship. We were spoiled. We get to go to a ton of games. We broadcast from there, et cetera. But when you see those iconic sweaters out there and you see Kane on the back, it's like, in 10, 15 years, we'll be thinking about the days we watched Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves play. So I agree. Soak it all in. And the guy's unreal.
All right. So the Blackhawks season is underway, and that was exciting.
Don't make me talk about the Bulls.
Well, there's nothing really to say.
No, I
don't mean to be mean to the Bulls, but like they're...
I mean, I'm a little intrigued to see if this core that they believe in can make some strides.
I'm just looking for another one of these rah-rah character speeches from Jim Boylan.
So
that's
boy.
Really... I find him endlessly entertaining, but the games are not that entertaining.
No, not at all.
So let's talk a little bit about the Cubs managerial search.
Yeah.
My feeling is that this is David Ross's job to lose. I might be wrong, but the feeling I'm getting is that they're going to interview, and it came out today, they're going to interview, you know, they interviewed Mark Loretta, they're going to interview Will Venable, they're going to interview Joe Girardi. I think Joe Girardi's got a shot at this job for sure if David Ross decides that, you know, he doesn't want to move back here and do a full-time in the dugout sort of thing. But at the beginning of the show, I talked to Mark Harmon about his interview with David Ross recently on his podcast. And I mean, he basically said it in the podcast. Not basically, he said it in the podcast. You know, I think about being in the dugout. I'd like to be in a dugout. I don't know what dugout would be better for David Ross to be in than the one at Wrigley Field on the third base side.
And then a day after the news that Madden was out, Ross was on ESPN. It looked like I was watching a presidential candidate pitch themselves and announce their candidacy for the United States, President of the United States. He was basically giving a quick 60-second elevator pitch to everybody. I was talking
Ross 2020?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Feels that way.
Yeah.
I was talking to a beat reporter who's been covering the team for a while, and I said, you think it's going to be, you think it's going to be Ross? He said it's his if he really wants it.
Yeah.
I feel that way, and I feel like he does. Not just because he's Grandpa Rossi and everything he brings. I just think he really does kind of fit the mold of what they might be leaning towards. Where I think in sports, if you go from the heated, crazy coach in football, the next guy is kind of the mild-mannered, soft-spoken, and then it goes back and forth. There always seems sort of a trend where it's this up. I mean, look at Q and then Colleton. Could they be more different?
Right. But you were in that clubhouse.
Yeah.
And so you got to see what Ross was like. I mean, I interviewed Ross a few times when I was down the dial, and I have met him several times, and he's a nice guy.
Very nice. But he doesn't mess around.
Right. But so I want to ask you about that, because what I've been told is that he's the guy that would come out to John Lester, and when they were at the mound, he is screaming at him.
Yes.
And when in the dugout, if somebody made an error, he was going off on
it.
So it's almost like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like there's this, there's two perceptions of David Ross. There's the
lovable
Grandpa Rossi,
and then hard-ass Rossi.
Yes.
Yeah, 100% agree, and I think that's what they need, because I don't think you want some guy coming in here and clashing with the players. Obviously, he's going to be accepted by the clubhouse, but you do need the guy to kind of bark at you a little bit. I remember that 2016 clubhouse, which was, on one side, you had Arrieta, Lackey, and Lester, and they had such a big presence in that clubhouse. You can feel their leadership. Right next to them was David Ross, who kind of was on his own island. And now that I look back, and now that you mention it, I think about it, it kind of does feel that way, where the only guy, that pitching core, those guys, the Arriettas, Lesters, and Lackeys, it's just, you could feel their presence in the clubhouse. And they were always, those three were always kind of standing there talking, and they'd kind of look around the room. You could tell they were kind of just overseeing everything. But then Ross was right there next to him. I mean, this is a guy who's been around baseball for a long time as a catcher. So I think it's a perfect combination of being the guy that won't clash, he won't have to learn the culture or learn how the Cubs operate, but also might be the guy that bites you a little bit when you don't. Most outs on the base paths for the Cubs. If you told me that was going to happen under Joe Madden,
three, four.
In 2016, there was no better team on the base paths. There was no better team defensively. They had a historically great defensive year. It was some of the best defensive baseball I've ever seen in my life. It was just clean. They did everything right. They hit the cutoff man. I'm going literally coach on you right now, but it was great baseball.
Right,
it was such an enjoyable team to watch. And I don't think this is such a knock on Madden as if he lightened up on the guys and let them. It just sort of ran its course. And I felt like the split was mutual. I think the Cubs made, I don't know if Madden would have left if it was 100% mutual. You see what I'm getting. I think they both understood. They had a glass of wine. They shook hands, patted each other on the shoulder, and they called it a day. And it just felt right to me, the timing of Madden going on.
It's probably a good glass of wine, too, because they don't mess around.
Yeah, Madden knows his vino.
Last thing before I let you go, and thank you for all this time.
Yeah, no problem.
The White Sox this offseason, I think, are going to have, it feels like this should be the kind of offseason that the Cubs had between 14 and 15.
A statement offseason.
Right. I know that that's a cliche and obvious thing to say, but it's clear that they're finding some of the pieces that can be on a winning team. And so it's going to be harder, I think, frankly, for them to land the big free agent than it was for the Cubs to do it because the Cubs were selling, you can be the guy on the team that wins the World Series for the first time in 108 years. And I mean, it's the Cubs. It was a sexy thing to try to sign up for.
Theo was there.
Right. The White Sox, I think, have a really intriguing young team. One, can they land the big free agent? And two, who do you think it's going to be?
Well, let's see. You know what? I mean, as history has shown us, that they can't land a big free agent, right? They missed out on Machado. Who knows what they were doing with Harper? I think they can if they're willing to spend money. That's all it comes down to. And I shouldn't say that's all it comes down to, because Lester had to be won over. There was a lot with that was a statement signing when Theo was able to convince Lester, and that put the league on notice. There's a lot of like if they get Gerrit Cole, that's a statement signing.
That'd be unbelievable. The one thing I would say with Cole, and I would love that for the Sox, is he's from L.A. or he's from Anaheim. He grew up like 15 minutes from that ballpark. Artie Moreno loves throwing big checks around. And if they go sign Joe Maddon, and you've already got this young core with Trout and Ohtani, and and Cole is from there, it just feels like for them to get Cole, even though I would want Cole in the Sox, they're going to have to pay that much more to get him. Because I think you're competing with the Angels for him. Unless he were to stay in Houston, but it doesn't feel like Houston's going to shell out that money for him.
I mean, what do you think he gets?
I mean, right now, I'm thinking he's definitely getting $200
million. 6 year, $200 million.
He's definitely getting $200 million. And, I mean, David Price got that $217 deal, right? So I would imagine he could get more than that. I mean, I'm thinking probably $230 million. Now, Jerry's history is he's never wanted to give a pitcher past 5 years, and they've never signed a contract.
There's that, and the highest
like
contract ever is Jose Abreu's. That's, what, $68 million?
Right, which has been incredibly well spent money.
No doubt.
But, I mean, are they going to do that? Are they going to go give him $230
million? They were prepared to give Manny Machado $275 million.
Position player, though.
Position player. Very good point. That's the risk of signing a pitcher. I understand that. The point I was making was, would they be willing to spend the money? There's options that make a ton of sense for them. J.D. Martinez is out there. Nicholas Castellanos. We'll see if the Cubs can bring him back. But how perfect would he be for the White Sox?
Yeah.
Kind of he's a good clubhouse guy.
Every day's opening day, man.
Every day's opening day. He would make a lot of sense. And you can never rule out a trade, too, right? I mean, they have so much in the farm system. So I don't know. The obvious names that have kind of been tossed around, Gerrit Cole is, I think, wishful thinking or optimistically thinking. They should be on the radar, and there's no reason the Sox shouldn't be extremely aggressive this offseason.
Need to be. Kevin Powell, you're a great man. I know you said that your voice is starting to go, but you sound great.
Good, okay.
Thank you.
I faked it enough through.
Thank you for taking all this time. I appreciate it.
You got it, my man. Thank you for having me.
Kevin Powell, your sports anchor in the afternoons right here on 720 WGN. Great to have him on the program. Thanks so much, my man. All right, coming up next, we will have a news update, and then following that, more show until 1 o'clock here on 720 WGN. /12:39, 720 WGN. I'm Jordan Bernfield with you here until 1 o'clock when Matt Bubala will take over these studios. Haven't seen Matt in a while. We'll be good to see Matt as he takes these airwaves right after the 1 o'clock news. And I have to say, we were talking about apps earlier tonight and talking about all these different technologies. Do you feel like you get so many notifications on your phone that it's like unbearable? Do you ever feel like this, Ashley? I subscribe to several of these different like news apps where you get, whenever there's a big breaking story, it sends you a notification to your phone doing some of the news stuff here now. I feel like it never stops going off. And my wife and I were having a conversation recently where we were talking about how when 20 years ago, before people had smartphones, all of these things that seem to drip out in the news every day, which feel exhausting, all would have been summed up in some kind of newscast that would have been on television or something would have been on, you know, on the internet. But now it feels like every 3 seconds, especially with what's been going on in Washington lately, I feel like I can't keep up. I don't know whether I'm riveted or exhausted by all of it.
It is nonstop, especially I think with us being in the media. Like my email blows up for nonstop from 6 a.m. till about 7 or 8 p.m. It's just nonstop you know, press releases, nonstop news updates, new videos that went viral. I mean, it's just nonstop. And I don't know if it's just us because we are in the media. We do tend to gravitate toward those outlets and subscribe to those, you know, channels. So I don't know if it's just us or if it's just everybody, because I'm assuming back in the day when you didn't have smartphones and you didn't have these apps that, you know, sent you these notifications, you could just escape. News.
It almost
turn off the TV or don't read the paper.
It almost makes me wonder if we've gotten to the point where, like, some of these things are not actually news, but we have to keep feeding the beast, and so it is news. So I wonder if the pace of news is actually different, or we're just now at a point where, because we have all these technologies in which we can put things out immediately, we just do it, as opposed to, like, I wonder if during the period in history when the Nixon Watergate thing was going on, if the story at the news was changing as rapidly as it is today with everything going on in Washington, but the difference was we didn't all have smartphones, or people that were around then didn't all have smartphones, so therefore they couldn't get every 2 minutes an update on something. I feel like lately, and don't get me wrong, I follow the news. I am interested in what happens in the news. I want to be a well-informed citizen, and certainly doing newscasts now here, I'm following the news maybe as much, if not more, than I ever have before. But regardless of what you think of what's happening, I feel like it's one of those things, especially with this most recent stuff going on in Washington, where every time I look at my phone, there are 8 new notifications about something that has occurred. And it's just like, it is hard to keep up. I don't know whether I'm exhausted or riveted by all of it.
Right. I mean, I think it's more exhausting than anything, because if you ever read a news story where you're like, okay, you know, the headline sounds interesting, I'm going to read it. But then as you're reading it, you're like, this is just fluff. There is no story here whatsoever. I wonder if it's just because as a society, we're just content hungry. Like, even all these channels, they want to be relevant. They want to be the one that has the first news story. So just by posting content constantly, whether it's, you know, news or not, it's just a way to get people to keep going back to their website, back to their social media platform. I think the best, like, social media platform and the best way to get your news fast, but not necessarily accurate, is Twitter. Because everything is fast, and you know when you go there, you might get fluff, you might actually get a real article. But, you know, some of the things that I don't like when it comes to, like, all the apps that we have because we're so plugged in are some of the nonsense notifications that you get. Like, I know I'll follow a bunch of people on Twitter that are news reporters or, you know, members of the Congress just to see what they're up to, just to keep up with what's going on. And you'll get a notification saying that, like, 3 of your friends like some tweet that's irrelevant. Like, I don't need that notification to see what my friends like. Like, I want to see who I'm following in the sense of what they have to say, not necessarily, like, my 2 of my friends liking some meme that is funny, but I don't need the notification. I'll find it on my news feed. I don't have to get
it. But I feel like now, though, the way Twitter has changed society is, like, you think about Facebook, but I don't feel like people are constantly refreshing Facebook feeds anymore. But people, everywhere you walk, people are constantly, constantly on Twitter. And I feel like there was a point where I think I was on it way too much, and I have learned to scale it way back. But even still, it is like the speed at which every one of these stories goes from piece of news to viral content is 30 seconds now. And I feel like we have gotten past the point where we can actually see a story, try to digest the story, and then discuss the story. Because by the time you do it, it's over. There's 15 other things.
Right. And, you know, the other thing is, I know for me, I've been caught in this trap before where you see a news headline, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or anywhere, really, on the internet, not in paper, where it says, like, some actress died or like whatever. And you're just like, oh my goodness, I can't believe she died. And then you try to do all this research and then you find some articles that say she died, some that say she doesn't die. And you find out later on that it's fake news. But you see the article, you believe it right away. You do take the time to either look it up or you don't. And you just tweet out, you know, so-and-so died of a heart attack.
Yeah, well, it's like during the Major League Baseball trade deadline, I know this every year because covering sports all these years, there are people that create fake Twitter accounts that have, like, the same picture as all the reporters, and they make the account look the same, but they don't have the blue check mark, and so people are all retweeting these fake trades that are not happening, and then people are putting them out there. I don't know, I feel like, you know, there's an app for everything. There is now a notification for everything. My phone does not stop going off. But I feel like we all need to do, like, the challenge where you get that screen time update at, you know, on Sunday mornings where it tells you how much you interacted with your phone on average per day. And every week I'm trying to lower it more and more. But I also feel like now we've gotten to the point where, and I do this all the time, you can't put your phone down for a minute because there's always something coming up on it. There's a new news story. There's some new tweet that's gone viral. And especially with the current news going on in Washington, the speed at which all this stuff is coming out, it is overwhelming. And I have to say, it's fascinating, no matter what side of the political lens you look through, to see how all of this is occurring, because obviously you don't get in normal American society, you don't have an impeachment inquiry. You don't know. I mean, these are not things that happen often. So every day, all the news that's coming out, it seems like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this story. And then an hour later, oh my gosh, I can't believe this story. And I don't know if this is going to be the pace at which all this news continues to break now that the dam has sort of been opened. But I almost feel like we've gotten to a point where the saturation of all of it is making it difficult for the average consumer to process everything that is happening, because there's so much happening and it feels like it is so important that you want all the details, but it's like you're being given the whole book and you're being made to speed read chapters every 10 minutes. And it's just, I am interested, but I also find it overwhelming. And I wonder if in this social media era that we're in, where there's so much technology that's bombarding us with it, that people are just, I wonder if, like, we're, because of the jobs we're doing, are completely consuming it, but most people are just tuning it out because there's too much to look at.
Right, and there are studies that show that we are a, what is it? I don't even know the wording for it, but we're like a now, like, quick pace type of society where we can't focus on something longer than a couple of minutes because we get things instantaneously. If we want to look up a fact, we get it right away. We don't really have that patience gene in our body anymore because just society has shaped us elsewhere. So the way it is for us now, it's like we want to find out news. We want to know what's going on over at the White House. We want to know what's going on, you know, happening with the Democratic debates and finding who's, you know, first, who's last. You know, Bernie Sanders had a stroke. We find that all out instantly. Whereas back in the day, when you don't have access to, you know, social media, to even email or getting notifications from, you know, newspapers, you had to wait. And whereas now you don't have to wait. So when you get all the notifications, it's just kind of like you have your answers at your fingertips, but it's up to you if you want to take the time and go through and read everything.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of Bernie Sanders, yeah, he had a heart attack 3 days ago, and apparently he's already going to be on the campaign trail beginning tomorrow. I mean, that's amazing to me. And that dude is 78 years old. He had a heart attack 3 days ago, and he's going to be back on the trail. Like, I honestly wonder if after, like, they, you know, whatever procedure he had to undergo in the hospital, he just woke up and was like, the top 1%, you know, it was just like, I'm ready to go. Get me back out there. But, I mean, he is, it is.
That's quick.
I give that man credit Bernie Sanders is a warrior. I mean, whatever you think about him politically is up to you, but this guy had a heart attack 3 days ago, and he's already out of the hospital. I mean, there's pictures of him waving to crowds as he's leaving the hospital, and he's going back to the campaign trail. I mean, he's not a spring chicken. That guy is 78.
I feel like these older men, I don't want to say it in a mean way, but these older men are very spunky. I was watching an interview with Danny DeVito the other day. He's 72, and he's hyper and jumping up and down.
Danny DeVito, 72?
Yeah, 72 or 74 or something like that.
Oh,
but they're
God.
Spunky.
Yeah,
they're
I
like
guess.
They're like a 12-year-old. I wouldn't say 12. They're like a 24-year-old in a 70-year-old body.
All these political candidates, well, except for, I guess, Andrew Yang is younger. Pete Buttigieg is pretty young. He's like 37. But many of them, the top players seemingly in this, are pretty old. I mean, Trump is 73.
Yep.
Biden's 76, Sanders is 78, Warren is 70. I mean, you have to wonder, I guess, about their health. Because, I mean, look at Bernie Sanders. He's out campaigning. He's out doing all these events. Guy has a heart attack, but 3 days later, here he is. He's ready to go.
Spunky.
Yeah. I wonder how many, because I must have gotten 15 notifications about the health of Bernie Sanders, but now during the show we're seeing that he is he's out of the hospital, he's ready to go.
You know, it's also interesting too, the reason we get so many notifications is because different people are writing these articles and everybody has their own take. You know, they get their own information from different outlets, from different sources. So when you're reading these articles, you're kind of piecing together all the information that isn't in every single article. So that's why we get so many notifications, is because somebody hears a bit of information, they make it into a news story, they send it out, and then they use other stories to kind of piece the whole story together. I'm sure the first person that found out that Bernie Sanders was in the hospital, all they knew was he was in the hospital, and they tweeted, Bernie Sanders is in the hospital.
Right, yeah, but I guess he's doing well, so it's good to know that he is out of the hospital so quickly, 3 days with a heart attack, but he appears to be okay, and that story would normally be a bigger story, but given all the other stuff going on in Washington, it's been completely thrown into the fray. But coming up at 1 o'clock, Matt Bubala is going to be taking over this studio, and he's going to come in and do some crosstalk in just a minute. And I think we have a break here, don't we? Yeah, we'll take a quick timeout, then Matt will join us for a little crosstalk, and I'm getting out of here, 720 WGN. WGN, Jordan Bernfield back with you for another couple of minutes, and Matt Bubala is in the studio. Good to see you, Matt. It has been one of the cool things about being back here is that all these people that I've worked with that I enjoyed getting to see after all these years, it's good to see a guy like you back here in the studio. So this is really nice.
Yeah, it's good to see you again, buddy. I'm glad you're back.
It is good to be back. It's unique to be back because we're in these new studios,
yeah.
And they're gorgeous.
That's right. A lot's changed
different.
Since you were last year.
A lot has changed since I was last here. That is for sure. But I have to say, you can really get used to sitting in the studio like this.
Yeah, the view's pretty gorgeous. There's no doubt about that.
It is pretty great. So what's coming up between 1 and 5
between
on your
1
show?
And 5 today? Well, we're going to do a lot of different stuff. After 1:30, we've got a TSA spokesperson on. You know, this real ID thing is coming. And there's a lot of confusion out there about, is my Illinois license going to work? Am I going to be able to fly? Am I going to have to get a separate ID? Like, what exactly is going to happen? So we've got a TSA spokesperson to kind of walk us through what you need to know to be prepared for this. And then in the 3 o'clock hour, we've got a guy. So I've got teenagers and I've got a son off of college now. I haven't seen him in a while. I have a son at Nebraska taking on the cats.
Oh, wow.
And then I've got triplets that are in eighth grade. And
can
so,
I just say, though, Lincoln is amazing.
Lincoln.
I love going down to Lincoln at
Nebraska. Lincoln,
Nebraska.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, I've done several games out there, and anytime the networks want to send me there for games, I'm like, yes.
Yeah. Last weekend was my first time going to see a game. Unfortunately, we picked the wrong weekend because they're playing Ohio State and just got demolished.
Demolition.
Oh,
yes.
It was so bad. But the atmosphere, they've sold out the NCAA record, like 360-some straight sellouts, something crazy like that. 90,000 people in the stadium. I mean, it's really something. The whole state basically just comes in for the game.
Yes.
It's really cool. So that was a lot of fun. But with all these kids and the technology these days, there's so much concern about what they're doing, what they're not doing on their phones. Like, we've got this Life 360 app, I don't know if you've heard of this, that monitors the kids' locations at all time. Even if you pay for upgrades, we'll monitor monitor like how fast they're traveling in a car and things like that. Well, we've got a guy on from overseas who's got this new app called Reply ASAP. If you text your kids and they don't respond, their phone shuts down until they respond.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how you talk your kids into this one. I guess you say, you know, the rule, I'm paying the bill for the phone, so I will put this on your phone.
Wow.
We'll find out about that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
A lot more fun stuff to do until 5.
No, that's really interesting. I mean, now it's so different. We went through the 15 weirdest apps on your phone about an hour ago on the show, but it is amazing, all these different app technologies. Like, my friends at this point don't have kids that are old enough for this to be the case yet, but I can only imagine when we have kids someday that, I mean, they're going to be...
You'll have something implanted in their ear by then.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, like it's like their GPS, I guess it's already there, basically. You have a GPS signal that can track your kids wherever they are.
Yeah.
So, if it was me, when I was a kid, I was like such a dork. I didn't do anything.
Plus, our parents didn't have no idea where we are. That's the funny thing is we're so over the top doing this, but I used to be out till the streetlights were on. They had no clue where I was. It's such a different world.
Yeah, it is a very different world. But thanks so much, Ashley Byhun. Great job producing tonight. Thanks to Roger Badish for all of his contributions. Thanks to David Jennings. Thanks to our guests, Mark Carmen and Kevin Powell. I'm Jordan Bernfield. Thank you so much for listening.